This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel, coming to you live from a rainy Manila, Philippines. With me, as usual, is my co-host, Chris Christensen. How are you, Chris?
I am good. I'm fixated about levels of sound here, but we sound okay, I think.
We need to calculate how many different countries we've done this in now. We've done this in Spain, we've done it in Canada, we've done it in the U.S., we've done it in Thailand, we've now done it in the Philippines.
Yes.
And probably, I don't know, something else that we're probably missing. And then calling in has been in a bunch of places.
Yeah, I have no idea. That would take us too long.
But anyways, so we're here at TBEX Asia, and as you know from these shows, we kind of do these in a live format, and we bring people through. So we'll have several guests in the course of this show, and the shows tend to run a little bit longer than the normal shows.
But, so get comfortable, pause, pee now if you need to.
But our first guest, and you probably don't know this, is Patricia Schultz. She is the author of what I am guessing is probably the best-selling travel book of the last 20 years, maybe?
Now, I'm guessing she knew that part. So what did she not know?
So before I started...
But I always like to hear it.
Is that true?
I've been told by numerous sources that I like to think are reliable.
Oh, and I should mention the book is 1,000 Places to See Before You Die.
And I love the fact that you brought a copy...
Just one. 2.2 pounds.
To sit on the table, yes.
It's which, quite heavy.
Which is like the size of the Gutenberg Bible. Before I started traveling full-time in 2007, so I sold my house to travel around the world, I bought one book, and it was this book.
To bring
I did
with
not
you?
Know that.
No, I actually read it before I left, and then when I left, I gave it to one of my friends who wanted to travel. So I'm sorry I kind of screwed you out of a sale there, but...
But what you didn't screw me out of was sharing the love and the inspiration, because at the end of the day, that's really what's behind a book of this kind.
But yeah, so that is quite literally the only book that I purchased before I started to travel, to kind of as sort of like the, I kind of liken it to the Sears catalog for adults, the Christmas catalog you get.
Now, I have sometimes, in all honesty, talked about it as the 500 places you should see before you die and 500 hotels you should stay in when you do it, because you came out of a lot of hotel reviewing background before, well, even now you're still doing that.
Well, in fact, the original book was heavy-handed in the hotel
section. The original is what I've read.
Yeah, which came out in 2003 because I've always loved hotels. And despite all of
I think that came across in the book to me.
And despite all of the backlash, which was the insinuation that I was on a lot of payrolls, in fact, it just came from a great, long-time, deep love for hotel collecting, all of these historic, iconic hotels that I could never afford, but just to go sit in the lounge and, you know, splurge my daily budget on a cup of tea or a whiskey at the bar in some great old 14th century Irish castle hotel, was, I thought, as much a place you wanted to see before you die, just because it was such an experience, as it was, you know, the more iconic Taj Mahals and the Grand Canyons of the world. But when I did the revision, which was a total rewrite and a complete reordering of the book in 2011 and then revised last year, I instead incorporated those hotels into more comprehensive write-ups or entries. So they no longer are standalone entries, but it also allowed me to then include hundreds of new places in the revision, and I didn't add to the title of 1,000. It rather just was a restructuring where all of those hotels became part of a greater and more comprehensive entry.
So you're saying you promise 1,000, but you deliver...
Millions! Really, in each entry there are multiple. Some of the entries are trails, whereas before in the Yucatan I had two or three different separate entries, standalone entries. Instead, in the revision, I merged all of them because all of these Maya ruins and destinations share a history, share a certain experience, and are accessible from one to the next. They really do create a doable road trip or a kind of Maya route. Mm-hmm. And that was another way that I was able to merge a lot into one, and then opening up the book to hundreds of places elsewhere. Because, you know, the more you travel, the more you just keep stumbling upon places that either you would heard about but had never been to, or you simply had never heard about. And I think that's the beauty of travel, that it's always a surprise.
Now, one thing I'm curious, and I mentioned this before we started recording, sometimes when we get somebody to keynote the conference, and obviously you were brought in because you do have a name that people were going to recognize, and you have a calling card here that's heavier than most, but you have been attending the conference. You have been sending out Facebook updates from, I liked this session or that session or whatever. Why? You're an established travel writer. You have been doing this for longer than most people in the room, I think it's fair to say. What were you getting out of the conference that you felt?
Well, in fact, Gary, who sits here beside me, and I'm not pandering, but I...
Oh, please pander.
I think you're pandering.
Just a smidgen. I felt very much the student. I mean, unless you are that person, invariably your two experiences may overlap a lot, and that's validation that perhaps you've been doing the right thing. It's always interesting to hear how other people have paved their path, or you overlap not at all, and that's pretty exciting because it means you have everything in the world to learn, and you always keep learning, and this whole social media environment world is so new to me. I mean, I really sure. feel like the grandmother here because in some ways I feel like I was just them 5 minutes ago, and in other ways I feel that I'm very last century because my beginnings and my groundings took place in decades when there was no social media to speak of, so I did things in a very different way. And it's fascinating to me what there is now to be taken advantage of, most of which either I don't know much about or don't know that it even exists. So you never stop learning, and you never, the day you stop learning, you may as well just sit home on the couch and watch Seinfeld.
Well, and I already made it clear that the version of your book that I bought and read was the first version, so it's been a while, so I don't remember your origin, how you got into travel writing.
I had been traveling for personal reasons. I had always loved it, never really had this epiphany that there could be a living made out of it. I thought it was merely what you did during vacation or for recreational purposes or just enjoyment. And I happened into a situation where I started writing guidebooks for Frommer's. And then once I started writing regularly for a particular line of guidebooks, I then wrote for Berlitz and American Express, which was not terribly kosher. It was never encouraged that you write for competitors, but nor was it forbidden because they paid so negligibly that they knew you needed to kind of take on as much work as you could. And then that kind of, was spun off into assignments and magazines, again, very...
So, but how did you start writing for guidebooks? You sort of say, I started writing for guidebooks.
Somebody called me and said, we need a chapter on Tuscany for Frommer's. Our author has a drinking problem. We have no budget because she blew it at the local bar. What she submitted is unusable. Our deadline is yesterday. We've heard through a friend of a friend that you've been living in Italy. Can you help us out? And I said, sure, no problem. Never having put two sentences before, ever. And I think I, stayed up for a week without sleeping and rewrote it 45 times and submitted something they were very happy with because they were desperate. And that was my foot in the door.
Did you ever buy a drink for the fellow who gave you the opportunity?
No, I think they still need to reimburse me for my Xerox costs or something. No, but it's funny how things happen to you. And I, there was no email then. This was, I think, in the 80s, how they even found me. They were very resourceful. They were very desperate. I mean, they really had a chapter to fill in an original titled book that needed to go to press like a week from Thursday. And I guess travel writers drink a lot. I don't know.
Travel bloggers have been known to.
I actually drink very little.
The only time
I do is at T-Bex.
And I drink not at all, but this person, I guess, drank enough for all of us. And thank you very much wherever you are. I never did find out her name, but I don't think she's working these days.
Approximately how many copies of A Thousand Places to See Before You Die have been sold?
In the English, that's not a real easy question to answer, but generally speaking, I think in the English language, about 4 million copies, and we did 25 translations around the world, and I don't even know what that translates to, if I may, probably another 1.5 or 2 million. And my publisher, who is one of the finest anywhere, I thank my lucky stars that I hooked up with them.
You can mention the publisher, it's okay.
Oh, Workman Publishing. They continue to revise it. Well, we continue to revise it and update it and keep it fresh and relevant and out there, and it continues to sell very, very, very briskly. In fact, it still breaks all records. So that, and we have incredible publishers overseas in Europe, the German publisher, the Dutch publisher, our Brazilian publisher, they sell as much. I mean, it's hardly that America has a stronghold or a monopoly on travel. People everywhere travel. So it continues to sell to this day, even though it's been 12 years, 13 years actually, since it first came out in 2003.
And I recall, I think I may have read an interview that you did once. This took a long time to prepare. Yeah. How long did it take from inception to publication?
It took 8 years of writing from the day that I went home with the signed contract. But in fact, But in fact, with the paltry advance that was really very laughable. But because I didn't have an open budget to just live on a plane and sell my house and go off and travel the world nonstop like you did, I had to pull on past experiences. And at that point, I had been traveling for many decades. And I kind of revetted them and made sure that, you know, they were wonderful then. Are they still wonderful now before putting them in the book without having visited them in 5 years or 15 years? But really, I spent those 8 years trying to see as much as I could on a $5 advance of places or entire regions that I didn't know. And it was also me trying to pay the rent, so it was doing this work for 1,000 places as well as trying to, you know, scramble with anything else I could to pay my, you know, just to live, as that great challenge as every freelancer knows. So they were 8 very tough years, and September 11th happened towards the very end when the travel industry just came to a screeching halt. But when it finally did come out, it was a time when people were starting to move again and travel again, so it actually was a perfect time when it came out in 2003. September 11th happened in 2001.
Any other questions we want to ask? We're going to have a number of guests on this show. Obviously, you were the first one we wanted to have on.
Yay,
because
thank you very much.
Is the book pretty much now, like with revisions and stuff, is this pretty much your life at this point?
Yeah, but I say that with a smile. I don't know if you can hear me smiling. But
I mean, with 4 million copies, I don't think that's a bad job.
It is my life. I mean, I'm forever, either if I'm not involved in an immediate pending revision, I know that there's one down the road. I also speak at travel shows or at TBEX. I'm very lucky to be here. I also am a contributing editor at Travel Weekly. We did a season of television for Travel Channel. We're doing another one with Peter Greenberg. We have ancillary products. I do 2 calendars. I mean,
yeah. So it's the brand,
like,
not just the book.
But it's the brand that keeps on giving, and hopefully, knock on glass, it will continue to do so. And I did a second title, which was 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada. And a revision of that is coming out now. So there's always something. It's such a comprehensive book that it lends itself to so many different kinds of spin-offs. And like I said, my Workman publisher is such a visionary and such a marketing genius that they are very much behind me and supportive, and they support a title that's been out 12 or 13 years the way they would a book that just came out yesterday. So I'm extremely lucky in that sense. But so are they, I like to think.
Because it seems like it has worked out okay for them.
Yeah, it's very familial, and I feel like the luckiest kid on the block.
I don't think a lot of publishers would give people 8 years to put out a book.
I don't think they really understood what the book was all about, and I went through 7 editors. So
oh, wow.
I think they, for not because they didn't want to do it, but one got another job,
sure.
One took maternity leave, one died.
Not related to
editing. No, but
the
while
book.
Pouring over my manuscript, I was told at 2 o'clock in the morning she just checked out. I guess after having read the last place she wanted to visit before she died, and so I think they lost contact with this project that they hoped would ultimately be one day a great product, but until then they were just leaving me to do my own thing. And then I did get that phone call that said, it's time. Wherever you are with the 1,000 places, it's time. And
they weren't like, if you're at 943, we're going with 943.
Actually, when they called, I was at 1,423 because one of those 7 editors said, keep on writing. We'll call it whatever your final count is. The latest editor who had the final word said, oh, no. We asked for 1,000, and we would like 1,000. So there are 400 and some that wound up on the editor's floor.
One of the reasons you combined some things in the newer version.
I resuscitated a lot of those that had been. Yeah. So most editors won't wait 8 years, but everybody's happy. So, and we've since done 1,000 recordings, 1,000 foods.
We picked that up with you.
What's that?
Audio.
And our final book is 1,000 books to read before you die, and then we're finished with this 1,000 thing because I think the market is saturated.
Not, you can go to 10,000.
1
going
trillion.
Multiples of 10. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. We've known each other online, but the first time we've actually been able to meet in person. So
in Manila.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
By the time this comes out, you will have given a great keynote, so I'd like to thank you in advance for the wonderful job you did on that keynote. And
I would like to thank you for your confidence. I guess I need to show up now, huh? Thank you. I have to match Gary's talk this morning because that was awesome. And it was just, he's a fountain of information and a fountain of experience. And it was very insightful for me because there's a whole lot I didn't know at all. So I walk away from TBEX with the same enthusiasm that a lot of these attendees are hopefully experiencing as well. A lot to be learned.
Well, the interesting thing is I got started doing this. And the idea of writing for a publication never crossed my mind. I would have been laughed out of the room if I had tried to do that. So this is just something I naturally did. And the result is I don't know anything about pitching an editor, about all the things that freelance journalists do. I don't know any of that.
I have sat through sessions where editors tell us how to pitch editors, and I thought, wow, that was really useful. I don't want to make a living doing that.
No, because I have a lot of freelance friends.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like misery. Right. Constant rejection.
It's horrible. But back in the day, when I started in the 80s and the 90s, that's all there was. That's what you did. And you didn't necessarily get better at it, but sometimes you got lucky at it. And that would kind of fuel you on to the next one. Like, oh, I can do this. The first one wasn't so hard, and then the second one is. But, you keep putting one foot in front of the other, and, all those years later, hopefully it pays off. And the only reason I'm still around is because I just kind of stuck to it while everybody, fell by the wayside. So
90% of success is showing up.
And staying and continuing to show up,
That's actually true in blogging. I mean, I've been doing this now 10 years, and there's just so many people that just quit. And the people that are successful are the ones that just didn't give up.
Mm-hmm. Never give up.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hopefully we'll be talking
in the future.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So it's time to bring in our next guest, coming all the way from Nairobi, Kenya, via Dubai, via Australia. Mr. Shane Dallas, how are you doing?
Great to be here, Gary.
Thank you. You spoke this session, and it was a topic that, when I first heard about it, I thought was odd. Why don't you tell us what it was?
Yes, but many people think I speak about odd things. This is nothing new.
This is odd for a particular reason.
Yeah, I was speaking about Google Plus.
Which most people, if they hear Google Plus, they think of wasteland, desert,
tumbleweeds blowing down the street.
We were wondering why you weren't speaking about Friendster, actually. That was the...
No, Google Plus, I think, is a thriving community. I get more than 1 million views every week on it. I have all year, 1.5 million on average every week this year. That's the minimum. So for me, it's an enormous community. It gets a very different market. So, for example, I can put my post on, let's say, Kenya on there, and I get so many Kenyans responding, where if I put the same thing on Twitter or even Facebook, I get hardly anything. Same with Ethiopia. I get so many people commenting who are Ethiopian, either diaspora around the world or living in the country. I get comments in Amharic, which is the national language there. And so it reaches a market. I won't ever get a tweet or a Facebook comment in Amharic, but I will on Google Plus, and I'll get multiple comments. So it obviously touches a certain section of the community that the other social media platforms don't reach.
You recently mentioned a tour you're going to be running to a place that I just visited, Tajikistan.
Tajikistan, yeah.
Why Tajikistan?
Because it's so hard to organize unless you've actually been there. And that's the issue. So I was there in 2013, and I spent a week and a half. I did a side trip into Afghanistan, which I won't be doing in this occasion. And to me, it was the greatest road trip I'd ever been on. And I've driven around Australia, which was a much longer trip, but to me, there was a sense of adventure and immersion in this journey. And people kept saying to me, we'd love to travel with you. Why don't you go somewhere? You know, we'd love to come. And Tajikistan made sense because unless you know a ground operator there, it's really hard to get around. So we're following the same journey I did back in 2013 with a few additions, adding an extra day here, taking out a couple of things that I don't think other people would like. For example, I really love camels, you know, I'm the travel camel. So, but I don't think unless you're really enamored of camels, the camel trek in Tajikistan is something to do. So that's been cut out, and horse riding is an option instead in neighboring Kyrgyzstan. And so it's 2 weeks through some of the most spectacular mountain scenery you'll see. It is not a comfort trip. I make no question about that. You're staying in homestays and yurts. There's no international fast food restaurant. There will be no English language TVs or radio stations. It's fully immersive for 2 weeks. And the tour is nearly sold out. We've almost sold it. We've got a limit of 4 cars, but we're probably going to close it at 3 cars. And we've only got 2 spots left in the 3rd car at the moment. So once we have that, it's in August, then we're away for 2 weeks. I'm so excited to share an incredible part of the world with people.
Excellent. You've been to a lot of places, but why Tajikistan? Why not?
Is this your first
Ethiopia
tour?
It's my first tour. Yeah, it's my first tour. Why not Ethiopia? That's a good question. Ethiopia has so many other people that you can go with. There are, do a search for tours in Ethiopia, and there are so many people who will do tours to Ethiopia. Do a search.
Of course, that's also counting the one that, you know, nearly got Gary killed.
Yes, so we might scratch
them off the
three
list.
Three dehydration, yes. But you have a look, for example, at Tajikistan, not just the western part. I know Gary's been there, but the Pamir Mountains, the Pamir Highway, the M41. Even though our tour doesn't follow the entire road, it takes in quite a bit of it. It's hard to find a tour for it. And because of the lack of competition and the fact you need local knowledge, it was a great first start. I've had other people, I've just come from my 100th country, which was Iran, and people are saying, if you go to Iran, we want to come with you. So now I'm thinking maybe that's an option as well. Possibly South Africa. I've been asked to lead a tour through to South Africa and wildlife safaris. I love my game drives, as they call them. So we'll see.
And there are some of us who, if we go to Iran, we have to be on a tour. Those of us with a U.S. passport can't be independent travelers right now. We could get a guide, but we have to be on something official.
That's exactly
right. So there are some advantages of doing a tour at a place like that where even independent travelers are looking at tours.
That's exactly right. I mean, being Australian, I was able to just walk in and didn't need a tour and wandered around. And an incredible country in every way, and far, very safe, very hospitable. So much to offer. The architecture, if you love photography, you will just be salivating at the buildings, especially in places like Esfahan. So tours in some cases you will need because the ground logistics are too hard. So effectively coming with me is a tour. But I know of people who try to organise it on their own, this tour. And I met them in Tajikistan, and they said they got to a city called Ishkishim, or city, a village or town, and they said they waited 2 days to get a spot on a vehicle taking them east. That's the reality. It's just not many vehicles that have spare spots. So in that case, going on a tour just makes more sense.
Excellent.
Anything else you want to talk about while you're here?
Well, we're here at TBEX.
Yeah.
And again, it's a tremendous place to be for people involved in travel media and the industry, and to even for people who are just starting, which most people think TBEX is about, but for experienced people like the three of us sitting here, there is people to meet. There's fellow people, like you just saying, you just met
Lady Schultz.
Patricia, it's the first time you had met her.
Yeah.
And so you wouldn't have had that opportunity had you not been at TBEX. There's a speed networking section. There's people in there who obviously have an interest in working with travel media, and instead of having to find them out, they're sitting in the room behind you. So for experienced people in this business, it helps a lot. So, yeah, there's a lot to be gained from coming to a TBEX.
And where can people find out about your tour?
The tour, go to the Travel Camel, thetravelcamel.com, and there's a thing on the first page, Tours Tajikistan. You can find me at the Travel Camel on Instagram, on Twitter, Google Plus, of course. I'm under the name Shane Dallas, and my tour is pinned on there. If you go to Instagram at the Travel Camel, it's actually pinned on that first page as well. So, as I said, we've almost sold out. We expect it to be sold out very soon. We've already got some Americans, some Australians, some Germans on the tour, so it's a nice collection of people, and it will be an amazing experience for whoever decides to come along.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much.
Sharing, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Gary, you want to point to the next person here?
Why don't you do that?
Brett, let's bring you on.
Sure.
Put me in, coach.
What's happening, guys?
Kind of looking like a cool Kenny Rogers.
Thank you. Is that an oxymoron?
And boy, people are wishing we had video at this moment. So,
I just learned this today, and don't ask me why this came up, but I came across it on the internet. Kenny Rogers was, what was the name of the, he was in a band. He was like in a hippie band.
Wasn't he in like Creedence Clearwater or something?
No,
like
but it was that song, The Condition My Condition Was In.
Yeah.
He's a lead singer for that.
Yeah.
I did not
back
know
in
that.
The 60s.
True facts.
Did
people.
Not know that.
It's true.
Well, anyways, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Well,
you know?
Who are you? Because
oh,
this
sure.
is audio and nobody knows who just walked in.
I am Brett Love. I run Green Global Travel, which is a blog, and I run Green Travel Media, which
is... And that's
is...
your real name, not your blues DJ name.
No. Love is my real name. Brett is a nickname that was given to me by birth. My real birth name is Burton Lassiter Love II, named after my great-grandfather, who was still alive. They didn't want to call me Burton because they weren't that
Did
cruel.
Not notice.
The great-grandfather was nicknamed Bert, so they didn't want to call me that because of confusion. So my aunt suggested Brett, and I have never been called anything but Brett. But it does not appear on any official documents.
I think...
It's not
Burton
my government
Love
name.
Could still work as your DJ name.
It could. But the love is real. It's legit. West Coast of Scotland.
You know that Neil Diamond is his actual name, the singer?
I did
and
not
they
know
wanted
that.
To give him a stage name.
Which was like...
Cherry Ice.
I did not know this.
And Neil Diamond's like a... You'd think that would be a stage name, but it's
Gary,
not.
Gary, you are a wealth of useless, trivial knowledge.
And all the useful information that used to be in my brain has been pushed out by that.
That is a sad, sad tale.
So explain a little bit about what you do with the Green Global Media and your website.
Okay, well, Green Global Travel is, we didn't even call it a blog when we first started out in 2010. We called it an online magazine.
Why did you not call it a blog?
Because I didn't know anything about blogging. I had never actually read a travel blog before. The idea was I came from a print journalism background running magazines and newspapers, and I basically wanted to be a smaller, independent version of National Geographic. I wanted to focus on travel that helps to conserve nature, wildlife, and indigenous cultures. So that was the concept. We were a multi-author blog right from the beginning. We've never been personality focused. It was all mission purpose, saving the world one story at a time.
It's not that you didn't have personality, you just weren't focusing on it.
Right. We didn't want it to be about us. We wanted it to be about the place, the people, the nature, and the culture, and all of that.
But
that
it could have been on the personality of particular rhinos.
It could. And certainly I've been told that I have more personality than I am willing to show on the blog, and maybe I should do the face chat or the snap time or one of those things that the cool kids are doing. But that's what we focused on. And then Green Travel Media, we decided to get a bunch of responsible travel bloggers together and provide services to tour operators and DMOs that were looking to focus on responsible travel, and that's what we do.
So first of all, it's great to hear you use the terms responsible travel blogger all in the same sentence with not irony.
They do exist. They are almost as endangered as rhinos, but they are out there. You just have to hunt really hard to find them and watch out for poachers.
What were you doing here at TBEX? You had a...
So part of our whole business thing is we believe that... the blogging industry could use more educated professionals, and so we do our best to take the tools that we use in building our business. Since we knew nothing about blogging, we use business skills, which both Mary and I have backgrounds in, and trying to apply that to how you would actually grow a blog organically by focusing on the branding. So we come to TBEX and we teach workshops on how bloggers can build a better brand from start to finish, and we sort of coach them through the process and give them individualized feedback on everything from the name of the site, logo, tagline, all the way on to PR outreach, advertising, and everything that goes into building an online empire.
As I understand it's his class, it's the class that I should have gone to before I decided to name a site Amateur Traveler. So,
except we weren't around then,
no,
so you couldn't
true.
Have
that
done
true.
That anyway. I was busy trying to be a freelance writer in the print world and not realizing that the dinosaurs were dying like canaries
What's
in a coal
with
mine.
Amateur Traveler?
Do you know how many times I've been asked, aren't you professional already? Or how many times people have said, actually, there are people who have said, I can't get your blog from my work because our corporate firewall blocks amateur because it thinks that that's a porn term.
Porn site.
That's a stretch.
That came as a surprise to me.
I also think the blogger bridge being turned into blogger bride is a much better business idea as well. So you seem to be like close but no cigar on this naming thing.
I think I lucked out with the name of my site.
Except for the dash.
Yeah, and the thing is I could have bought it, but I was too cheap. And then I got picked up by a big phone company, and then that kind of went away.
I remember that. Yeah. I'm perfectly happy with my name. My name's perfect for me.
So how much longer are you in the Philippines?
Well, we are going, my wife / business partner, Mary, had always dreamed of doing the Northern Islands. So we spent a few days there before the conference, and we're going back there for 3 more days, leaving tomorrow. So we're almost done. We've been here almost 2 weeks now, so... coming to an end, and then going back to the somewhat real world.
And have you been in the Philippines before?
We've never been to Asia before, man.
Oh, that's right. You
mentioned
that.
I mean, we've been to Jordan, but I don't think that technically should count as Asia.
It counts,
but historically, yes. But it just, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
So it was very exciting, and we liked it more than I expected to like it. So I have a feeling we will be back at some point in the near future.
It's easy to miss Asia. It's not that big.
Yeah.
So you can...
Well, we're so far away in Atlanta, there's like not an easy way to get here. So it's a long...
Airplanes?
Yeah. But it's a long way. What'd you do? You did 11,000 miles to get here?
The main stretch was Minneapolis, Tokyo here. So that was... a little under 17 hours total flying.
Yeah, we did 9,000 miles of travel just to get from Atlanta to here, and then...
and 12 time zones.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so... but, I'm glad to be here.
But TBEX last year, I did Atlanta to Tokyo.
Which is odd, because it wasn't in Tokyo.
Well, but then Tokyo...
Gary was in Tokyo.
Anyways...
yep.
Anything else? Want to leave people your URL or where they can find you online?
Sure.
Got to promote.
Yep. There's greenglobaltravel.com and greentravelmedia.com. One is for pleasure, the other's for business, and that's pretty much it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate it.
Who is next, Chris?
So, bringing in our podcaster, and this is completely selfish on my part because introduce yourself.
Dude, is this like podcast inception?
This is.
There's a podcast in the podcast?
Exactly.
So introduce yourself for our audience.
My name is Palabo. My name used to be Christensen. We're not related, but I'm from Denmark, and I do a travel podcast called The Radio Vagabond.
And the main reason I got him on, one, is he's been waiting for a while, and also, your voice carries, dude.
It does?
You've already been on the podcast for the last 20 minutes.
I'm so sorry. So sorry.
I mean, you even got a nicer version of the Zoom recorder.
Yeah, that's a new one, yeah.
That's the H6?
No, this is the 5.
Oh, the 5, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you started traveling full-time.
Yeah.
4 months ago?
Yeah, just in the beginning of July.
But your goal is all the countries.
That's right. That's right. That's my aim.
But you're coming from a more traditional media. So.
Yeah, my background is radio. I've been doing radio for 32 years almost. All kinds of stuff, from being a morning DJ to a station manager and...
Morning DJ in what format?
CHR.
I don't know what CHR is.
Contemporary hit.
Thank you.
Top 40.
I am not...
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
I'm completely willing to show my ignorance.
Yeah. I had some years where I did telephone pranks as well, so, yeah.
The path from radio disc jockey to full-time nomad travel... podcaster.
At the moment, I run a company where I produce radio commercials, and I can do that anywhere. I produce Danish radio commercials just with my laptop, and I bring actors into a studio in Copenhagen and direct over Skype, and then get all the recordings and do the editing. And I can, of course.
So you're working out of a studio. You're just not in the studio.
That's right. That's right.
That's a new one. I had not heard that one before. Okay. So, I would have thought that would be one of those jobs you could not do from the road.
Absolutely. It's I don't need to see the actors.
Because it's radio.
Yeah, it's radio. Sometimes it's a disadvantage if you look at them. Yeah. Just hearing the voice, you can relate to it.
Huh.
Yeah.
And so at some point you decided that you did not want to be in the studio. It wasn't that you wanted to leave the job, you just wanted to leave the beautiful city of Copenhagen.
Yeah, well, I didn't live in Copenhagen anyway, my daughters are grown up and moved out of the house, so I thought now is the chance for me to travel for some years until they start producing grandchildren for me. So
got it.
Yeah, and since I have this work I can do anywhere, I sold my house and my car and my furniture, and now I'm just going traveling. Non-stop.
Starting in Europe.
I started in Eastern Europe. I did 12 countries in the eastern part of Europe, and then I went to Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and then here. And now I plan to travel in Asia for a year. I don't know, but my plans, they change.
And you're currently creating content in English or Danish?
In English. I started up doing it in Danish, but...
Well, last time we talked, you were doing it in Danish.
Yeah, yeah. And now I'm... when I got to Macedonia, I met so many people that say, oh, do it in English. So I do. But I also do a weekly radio show for the national broadcaster in Denmark, and of course that's in Danish, so it's double the work. So, I enjoy it.
And is that travel related at all?
That's the same.
Oh, it's the same. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a 10-minute.
So we're on that show right now, is what you're saying.
You could be. You could be.
God forbid we have to speak Danish. All I can do is a couple Christmas carols. Then I'm out of Danish. So,
I actually think I did that on my ancestry. Like, if you go way, way back, like to the 18th century, I have a relative from Denmark, but I know absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah, half my family is Danish, and we know them going back to the 1600s, and like so many of the families, my German side of the family also traces back to the same time period, which is about roughly the time of the 30 Years' War when everything burned down, and there are no records before that, so we don't know anything before that.
So tell us about your podcast. What's it about?
Well, I try to do a different kind of podcast where I do a lot of the recordings in the streets. I talk about the people I meet and the things I see and what I'm thinking, and try to describe the countries I'm in as best as I can, but making it almost like a montage where people can can see the mental pictures in their head just by hearing the sounds. hopefully that's it, that's the idea, and a lot of storytelling of what's going on.
And Chris mentioned you're on a quest to visit every country in the world.
Yeah, I started out by saying, around the world in 80 weeks, just visiting 80 countries or so. And then I went to 2 years and then 4 years and 100 countries. And a month ago, I made a decision that now I'm going for them all. It might take me a bit longer. So
one of the reasons I mentioned that Gary is in Gary's presentation today, he challenged bloggers to identify a quest.
Yeah.
And said that even before you complete the quest, and gave a couple great examples, you can start being thought of as one of the people.
Yeah, you can reap the benefits of it.
Right.
Exactly.
And you had a radio interview within the first how many weeks of having declared you were going to go to every country?
Yeah, well, I was briefly in Denmark, and I was invited to be on primetime TV. So there I said it out loud for the first time, I'm going for every country in the world. So now I've said it out loud and wrote it on my website, and now it's out there. So when you said that, Gary, in your presentation, that declare your goal, that's what I'm doing.
My friend Lee Abamonte has been to every country, and he published a book that interviewed some other people who've done it, and I want to say there's a little under 100 people that have done it. Are there any other Danes?
Yeah. A friend of mine, I think he's one of the youngest, if not the youngest in the world. He did it before he turned 28. His name is Henrik. He has a website called Henrik Travel. And he's the youngest, and he's a good friend. We talk every day, and he helps me out with a lot of tips and advices on how to do it. Well, there's two people from Denmark. The other guy is in his 70s, so maybe I'll be the third.
Easier to be in your 70s and gotten everyone.
Yeah.
Well, that's what most of the, like if you go to the Traveler Century Club, it's mainly people that are older because it's a lifetime of travel to do that. And it's not easy.
Excellent. Want to tell people URL where you can find more about your travels?
Yeah. My podcast and my blog is on theradiovagabond.com. And I'm also on Twitter as The Radio Vagabond, and on Instagram as Palabo.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Who's next?
We're bringing in some people here from the Philippines.
Hello, hello.
Introduce yourself to our audience.
Hello. I'm Ivan Mandy. I'm a tour operator by day and a
crime fighter by night.
Yes. Yeah, blogger / writer by night. And I'm Ivan Henares. I'm a travel blogger in the Philippines, I teach tourism at the University of the Philippines.
So you have been a travel blogger in the Philippines for
since 2005, so this would be my 11th year.
Because I think we ran into each other online.
Yes,
not 8 years ago, 9 years ago or so.
Yes.
We have an episode of The Amateur Traveler on the Philippines from back then. I know you were doing this.
I think I recommended it.
Yes.
Did you? Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yes. I just don't remember that part of it.
Gary did. And
speaking of recommended, we are basically in the Philippines because of the force of will of
somebody there.
Philippine bloggers, particularly Anton Diaz, who's been very actively bringing T-Bex over. It's finally here.
And we're very happy.
We're very happy, and it's almost done. Well, not yet, because we have fantastic tours next week. I saw the long list of post-Bex tours, and they're really fantastic. They'll be going to a lot of destinations. Well, both of us are named Ivan.
And you're basically the two Ivans in the local tourism scene.
So, he's very, very, very popular.
That's easy to remember. Tours of Manila.
If you saw one of the episodes of Anthony Bourdain on Manila, he was one of the people who brought him around.
And if I were to come back to Manila, or our listeners were to come to Manila, what is the best tour you do on Manila?
We do tours of the old city. We do food tours of Chinatown.
Intramuros.
We do tours of weird places like cemeteries.
The Chinese cemetery is a very interesting place.
The Chinese cemetery, which you have to visit on your next visit to Manila. It's a cemetery unlike you've never seen before.
And of course, the palace.
And the presidential palace. We do all the juicy palace gossip, stuff. Who screwed who, right? So
I'm assuming you stop with former presidents and don't talk about who.
The current one, of course not. Not at the presidential palace.
Not that there's any scandals that you could talk about.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to imply anything.
Well,
but
all the presidents we talk about in our palace tour are dead.
Yeah, that seems wise. So yeah,
we play safe.
Seems like a good idea.
So, what's the travel blogging scene in the Philippines like?
It's a very active group. We're actually a very, very big group. I think we have a decent delegation that actually joined the TBEX this year. It's quite a challenge getting them in because they're all over the country. Right. So we get to see each other online, and basically there's a... if I'm not mistaken, we're already 400 in the group, and there are bloggers who are actually not part of the group who are travel blogging. So it's a very... active,
it's a very connected community.
Yes, and given that the Philippines is always on social media, it's a very influential group as well. So you get to see a lot of the travel bloggers going around, not just in the Philippines, but in other countries around the region.
Well, I think we Filipinos have traveled more in the last probably 20 years than we have
actually
ever.
in the last 5 years.
Yes.
The scene has changed a lot. I remember when I started travel blogging, there are very few direct flights to Manila.
Huh.
Into Manila and out of Manila.
Even within ASEAN.
Yeah, I had to go to Bali via KL. I had to go to Siem Reap via KL. And now it's the doors are open, so it's very... the Philippines is very accessible, so travel bloggers have actually been able to go around more easily than when I started 11 years ago. So the regional flights have definitely boomed, and the routes have definitely increased, making access to the Philippines much more easier for the traveler.
Well, and you both have focused more on inbound people coming to the Philippines. But there's also, of course, a huge Filipino diaspora.
Yes.
I don't know how many million.
We have 10 million documented. We have 10 million documented, so I don't know how many are the exact number. We really can't tell.
Yes.
But
that's been more than most countries.
Definitely.
10 million would be a good sized country. That's bigger than all the European countries.
It's bigger than some European countries.
That's half the size of Australia.
Yeah. Well, we're not exactly the smallest group of people on Earth.
And many of these people are actually in the service industry in tourism. So you take a cruise ship, you'd see a lot of Filipinos.
Yeah, typically I find half Filipino, half Indonesian.
Yes, and then
sick, you go to a hospital, it's a Filipino nurse.
Yeah.
Or a doctor.
Or a doctor.
We train our people to be in the service industry, and we're doing quite well as a service
Everywhere
provider.
I go in the world, I'll meet Filipinos.
Definitely.
Every continent, including Antarctica. I'm not kidding. On the boat.
You met someone on the boat. Oh,
yeah.
He must be freezing to death, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. You keep the air conditioning really cold.
Yeah. It's a local thing here. For some reason, we always have to have our aircon full blast. In the buses, in the restaurants. And if we don't, people complain.
It basically compensates for the
heat.
The heat outside.
I was surprised. I went on one of the walking tours of the Intramuros.
Yes.
And it was the two Filipinos who were complaining about how warm it was.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, hang on a second here. They were actually from Manila.
Right. And that's why we tell people, when I have travelers, when they go take our buses, long-haul buses, 8 hours overnight,
Bring a coat,
bring a jacket, bring...
or a blanket.
Yeah, a shawl, a blanket. Yeah,
people would bring blankets on board.
What do you consider the best time of year to visit Manila would be?
I would think it would be the last quarter of the year and the first quarter, simply because the last quarter is supposed to be the time of the year when we have no more typhoons. So it's supposed to be nice and dry.
Just be careful.
Cool.
If you do the last quarter of the year for Manila, you have to deal with Christmas traffic.
Yeah.
So
the weather's fine.
The weather's fine, but
as opposed to the regular traffic,
And first
Christmas traffic is really bad because everyone's going shopping.
Yeah.
You know, buying all these presents. I think January, February would
be
perfect.
Nice. Yeah.
The climate is very pleasant. Pleasant. It's very pleasant.
And cool. And by cool we mean 22 degrees. Yeah. 18 degrees here.
That's rare.
It's newsmaker.
Yes.
It's newsmaker already.
I'd say it.
I don't know. My hotel room was 16, so.
that's probably the aircon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that was negative 10.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
when it starts.
Carries a room place that actually gets winter, so.
Right.
So before you guys go, I want your. If someone's coming to the Philippines for the first time, the top three things you'd recommend they see or do while they're here?
Well, is it for the Philippines, the entire
country? Sure, whole country.
Well, for me, of course, I mean, people might not agree, but you have to visit Manila. Because Manila is a very, I mean, as crazy as our jams are, it's a city packed with things to do, to eat. And it's a great place for a jump-off points in nearby places around outside the city, like, which may not make it in your usual travel.
Like Pampanga
province,
Batangas, Laguna.
Batangas province. You know, these are nearby. They don't see busloads of tourists, but you do get a very, very local feel.
And why would I go to Pampanga?
Pampanga is the culinary capital of the Philippines. It's
okay.
It's the birthplace of sisig. And you can get a lot of different
and
kinds of
you can
cuisine.
It's the birthplace of
sisig.
And I don't know what that is.
Oh, sisig is
it's chopped pig's cheeks and ears.
Yeah, so you grill, they grill the cheeks of the pig
with chilies and
liver and they chop it. It's minced. Brains, it's
okay.
It's fantastic. You should try it.
Yes. And then I would also go to a place called Bicol region, which is the south of Luzon.
Okay.
It's a beautiful region with many islands, not as touristy as Palawan, if you want peace and quiet, with blue seas and white sands.
Of course, my own volcano is there. You can do whale shark watching in Don Sol, Sorsogon. That's it. Of course,
Mayon volcano used to be the one of the most perfect cones.
Volcano.
It's kind of like
it's on the 100 peso note?
Yes. 1,000, I believe.
Is it 1,000?
Anyway, it's how a child would draw a volcano. That's how it looks. And if we really have the budget to blow, go to Batanes Islands, which is the northern part of our country, closer to Taiwan than to us.
And of course, Palawan.
Palawan is also great.
What 100?
Yes, it's in the
100 peso bill. Okay.
Oh, shame. The foreigner knows the money more than
check.
You do.
Right. Unlike the American political debates, we do real-time fact-checking here.
and for people that are thinking of coming here, English is pretty universal.
It is, right?
Yes,
and that
basic.
Has to do with the fact that when we were a colony of the United States, they made sure that English was in the educational system. The result of which was Spanish was eradicated during those 50 years.
Adios,
so it's very rare for you to hear a Filipino who knows how to speak Spanish, but definitely.
I mean, it's not the same as the New York accent.
Yeah,
we have our own words which are peculiar to us. But I think you at least will be able to get around.
Well, but in Manila, at least it's
understandable.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's not just understandable. It's really fantastic.
Yes.
Though the English is
and
fantastic.
So if people are concerned about the language, I would say this country probably more than any other one in. Singapore might be the only exception.
Singapore would probably be the exception. And Hong Kong.
You get by with English just fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone in the Philippines can speak the English.
It's one of our official languages.
It is an official language.
Yeah, we have two.
Right.
Yeah. So, you have to visit us.
Some URLs where we can read more about the Philippines or Philippine tours here?
You can check out my partner's blog. It's ivanhenares.com. Or if you want to do Explore Manila, you can go to our website. It's oldmanilawalks.com.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thanks both.
Thank you,
Ravens.
Thank you.
Coming on the show and for having us.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Manila.
Okay.
And who do we got coming up next?
We have one of our other keynoters here.
Don't want to have any dead air.
What's up, fellas?
Enter and sign in, please.
I have one of those.
You don't want me in, do you?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come join us.
And Chrysler's new, the 2016 Evo Terra, the sporty SUV.
It's a Mitsubishi.
So, guys, introduce yourself.
Well, that's Sheila D.
I am Evo Terra's handler and keeper, and I don't even know what else I have to do with him.
All of those things. Let's see, we're a pair of sometimes travel bloggers who are originally from America, and now we live full-time in Bangkok.
Long-time podcasters, but only recent travel.
Yeah, right.
Travelers,
exactly, right.
Or travel.
Yeah, both of those things: traveler, travel blogger, travel podcaster. All of those things. Yeah, we
and our opening keynoter.
I was. Yeah, it was fun.
Spoke about something. I really have no idea.
It's kind of random. Yeah, it was a good time. No, you're exactly right, Chris. We left home in January of 2015. Started just incorporating our travels into our podcasting and into our blogging, and someone told us we were travel blogging. I said, oh, I guess that's a thing. And
I've heard that.
And that's how it kind of happened.
So you guys live in Thailand right now?
Yeah, Bangkok. I teach computers to 8 to 12-year-olds.
And while we were here, the king of Thailand passed away.
He did.
Very big event for the country.
The biggest event in 70 years,
and
without doubt.
And has been dreaded for some time. I mean, it's not
definitely,
like,
this was not unexpected. Yeah. He has been out of the public spotlight for at least 2 years, and in the hospital the vast majority of those. So it was not a matter of if, but when it was going to happen.
And he, I think, what, 70 years? He was
70 years on the throne. That's correct.
One of the longest reigns of any monarch for any country in history.
At the time, he was the current.
Yeah, but I don't remember.
So the vast majority of people in Thailand have never known
anybody else
other than this guy.
Because he was 70 years. And so, yeah, most people have never seen
it. Very interesting, you know, with this whole transition story in the news and such. Mm-hmm. I heard, an official spokesperson on the Thailand, or from Thailand, on the TV locally here, talking about the consistency and continuity of a monarchy style of government versus those erratic democratic sort of governments, and why it is better. And I thought,
have you seen your country?
Well, that's
how many coups have they had since World War II?
That is an interesting perspective on that. Well, and the other thing too, historically, monarchies work out very well when you have a good king.
Yes.
And of course, part of the concern in Thailand is there is a transition now,
right,
and you've got somebody
right
known, but not the old king.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not the old king whatsoever. And exactly,
not that we will have you say anything negative about a king of
exactly
Thailand.
Right. But exactly what you said, Gary. You know, there have been multiple coups. Right? The last one was in 2014, just before we got there. This is the country that's had 22 different constitutions since
World War II.
Since World War II, basically. 22 different constitutions. So there's having stability in this constitutional... Yeah, maybe so. It's a constitutional monarchy. The king doesn't have all that power, but what the king of Thailand certainly had was he captured the hearts of all of the people in Thailand. So the vast majority of Thais, he was the heart and soul of the country, and they truly are mourning.
He's really good at unifying the country itself, so brought them all together. So,
no, I mean, all the time I've spent there, I genuinely thought that, you know, they love the king in the same way that most people in the UK, I think, like Queen Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And likewise, when, you know, she's no longer queen, her kid may have not quite the same level of support.
Yeah, and she's next, right? She's currently the longest running living monarch.
There's a lot
right
of similarities because the crown prince in Thailand is 64.
60, yeah, right.
Prince Charles is in his 60s.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they've both been kind of sitting on the sidelines for a very, very long time.
Now, right.
Yeah.
It's definitely we are about to go through a period of transition, but that one actually won't happen for a year. We've just found out that the funeral services last a year, and at the end of that is actually when the crown prince will assume the throne. So until that time, there is a regent who is looking over the crown. Yeah, but of course, I mean, the whole thing is ran by currently General Prayut, and theoretically the Congress or Representative House that we have there, which doesn't exist.
The regent that's coming in is a former prime minister who's 98.
So he's got that going.
So he has experience, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Exactly. That is exactly what I said.
Yeah. Well, in fact, we just, before we came to the last half of the TPEX here, we had to go record our podcast episode for this week. And of course, ours is a comedy/travel show, but we needed to talk about what happened in Thailand because we're Thailand-based. There was zero comedy in today's episode. It was, we need to let the audience know what's happening, and we'll be back to our normal funny, stupid, goofy selves next week and tell you all about Palawan, which is where we're headed to here on our fan trip in the Philippines.
I've been there. Police Port of Princesa is where I went, the underground river. Yeah.
Where we're supposed to do that, and another, like, two different cave trips, which is awesome. Yeah.
So when they, you remember, it was like a year or two ago, they did this, the seven natural wonders of the world thing. Yeah, so that got picked as one of the seven wonders of the world.
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay.
But it does show the power of online voting. Which is why I think a lot of Filipinos are proud of their country, and that's how it got picked.
And Stephen Colbert was the second most?
But it's interesting. It's a UNESCO site, but I wouldn't say it's one of the seven coolest things. But it's interesting.
It's something to go to. Well, yeah. we've done underground rafting and stuff in Belize. That's a big cave system there that goes through. And so,
you did the cenote. We did the
cenote diving in Mexico. Yeah. So
the interesting thing for me is I grew up in Salinas, California, which when I grew up had, quote, the longest underground river in the world.
Ah, really?
Turns out not so much.
we have
discovered many longer underground rivers since then.
I want to say this one in the Philippines is the longest navigable river. There's some qualification
see,
to
that's
it.
What the,
I thought it was the longest known underground river, because that's the...
There's ones that are, depending on how you define it, but it's like you could never go down it.
Sure.
Like, it's just a small...
So I read that same thing about the longest navigable river. But when I think of the term navigable river, to me, that's not you can float on it. To me, that's like we send ships up and down this river.
Mississippi.
They don't send ships up and down this underground river, do they?
They send...
I wouldn't think of it. I would just think of it as you could... Like, literally, a raft would be navigating.
Huh.
It's a lazy
typically,
river.
Though, we do use the term for ships.
Yeah. Okay, right. That's the way so I've
how
always...
Far, how far is the Hudson River navigable? Would
right.
Be
like, the technical definition that's used, I know, like, for the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin.
There we
like,
go.
You literally have to be able to take
which I really
a
think
small
is
boat.
Definitive.
Definitely, yeah, because, I mean, Wisconsin, if it weren't for sailing ships, we'd have never found Wisconsin. No, wait, that's not true.
Actually, it is true, because...
Oh, they go to the rivers.
Went up the St. Lawrence came to the Green Bay, and they were the first Europeans in Wisconsin, and they did it from the sea.
Was the football team already there? Did they discover the football team?
They had won three Super Bowls at the time it was discovered.
I did not know
that's
that.
That's how good they were.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Of course, it was easier at that time.
Yes, right. The Lombardi tribes were the natives that they met.
Not commonly known.
No. The things you learn when you travel.
Excellent. Want to give us some URLs of where we can find you online?
So probably the best thing to do is just go to our website. We are the Opportunistic Travelers at theopportunistic.com.
With that first
yes.
word you're saying
opportunistic
is...
opportunistictravelers.com. But if that's too hard to remember, just go to shivo.wtf, the greatest top-level domain in the world.
It's appropriate.
Shivo.wtf.
Yeah.
All right.
It'll work. Read right through there. Thanks,
that
guys.
That would be Sheila and Evo.
Oh, that's right. Shivo.
Shivo.
There you go.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
We are not man. We are Shivo.
Yeah, I would say that a lot.
The WTF part made the most sense to me of that whole...
I didn't know that was a top-level domain name.
Certainly is.
I did not know, but, you know.
When we saw it, we're like, yeah, that's
Gary Arnka, it. WTF is certainly coming.
All right, Rick's turn.
Thanks for keeping it warm. Tell them all about podcasting.
And your producer.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, welcome. Introduce yourself. I don't know who you are.
Excellent. Hey guys, my name is Rick Gazarian, and my blog is Global Gaz. Based out of Bangkok, like Evo and Sheila, originally from Boston and Chicago.
And how long have you been in Bangkok?
I moved there in 2013. I'm spending about 6 months a year in the city, a couple months in the U.S., and about 3-4 traveling randomly.
Well, I think the most important question is, when you say you're originally from Boston and Chicago, who were you rooting for in the playoffs?
I grew up in Boston, but lived in Chicago the last 15 years. So if it's a head-to-head competition, it's always Boston teams first. If Boston's not in the competition, then I'm in the side with Chicago.
And Boston is no longer in the competition.
Yeah, so...
I only bring that up because Gary is strongly rooting against the Cubs. Strictly for...
We need, as a nation, a metaphor for failure and futility. And the Cubs have been that for decades. And if they actually win now, what do we do?
There's the Cleveland Indians, which have a 60-year streak.
Yeah, but a century, that's hard to
do. Special. I agree.
I would love to, you know, to live to be 110 and still... The Cubs are waiting for next year. I think that would just be great.
And Rick, what do you do at theglobalgaz.com?
Okay, so a couple of different things. I'm wearing a lot of hats. So I'm
Actually wearing no hats.
Well, metaphorically,
although this is radio, we do real-time fact-checking.
Okay. I wish they would do that in the debates.
We pointed that out.
One of the things I'm trying to do is I'm trying to go to every country in the world, 193 countries according to the UN. I'm at 101, sounds good, but still 92 left. Also have a podcast called Counting Countries, where I'm interviewing people who have completed the goal or are en route to finishing it at some point.
So I want to pause here for a second because Gary told me at some point, based solely on the number of countries somebody has been to, he can tell what continents you have been to.
Roughly.
Well,
no, I can tell.
I want to test your predictive powers here. 101 means that Rick has been to more than Europe.
He needs to spend a lot of time in Africa still.
Yes.
And the Pacific. Probably the Caribbean.
Very astute so far.
Yeah.
You could, might
I'm guessing you've done a lot of Asia and Europe and North America, some South America and Central America.
Pretty spot on. Europe.
Next, he'll be guessing your weight and your age.
Well, no, it's just that there's a lot of countries in Africa. It's based on most people who do this.
Right.
But
you get to the easy countries first.
But in the same way, I've also been to Iran, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Jordan, Israel, Egypt, so.
Well, Egypt's not that hard.
No.
That's
but,
an easy one, but.
Well, I wouldn't say. But if you're.
Yemen and Syria, I would give you points for currently being difficult to get to. Or not recommendable.
And really raising some red flags when you come back in the U.S.
Yeah.
So what's next on the list?
Yeah, so I've got 102 and 103 coming up. I got a trip to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan actually on Thursday for about 2.5 weeks. So. Very excited about Uzbekistan, which, at least in my mind, really epitomizes the Silk Road. So, looking forward to...
I was just there this summer.
Okay. Any tips?
It's just Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
Try the horse.
Sounds perfect.
It's really not
good. You mean as a dish.
Medium rare?
Not as a means of transportation.
You can do both, technically.
Okay.
You could ride the horse and then eat it.
And at the same time.
I thought Tashkent was the nicest city we visited of the capital city. So we went to four of the former Soviet Republic stands.
Went to Tajikistan and Turkestan?
No, not Turkestan. Everything but Turkmenistan. Because that's kind of the oddball.
It's the North Korea of the stands.
Yeah. But they recently changed a lot of the visa rules. Within a few months... And you can now get to Tajikistan with visa on arrival, which was not the case. I had to, because that was like June 1st, they changed it, and I applied for my visa in May. And then I was like, I didn't need to do all that.
Well,
and Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, you don't need a visa if you're there for under 2 weeks, I think.
I actually applied for a Turkmenistan visa. I was supposed to be going for the National Independence Day. But the government stopped issuing all tourist visas during that time period, so I had to change my plans and ended up in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan.
To say that you wanted to go and honor the father of the Turkmen.
It didn't work. It didn't work.
Excellent.
What is the most obvious country that you haven't been to?
Great question. But should I turn it on you? Do you have a guess?
I know that
I have some very obvious ones that I started traveling.
Country size.
In 2007, I started going across the Pacific. So I was in Nauru and Kiribati and all these places before I ever got to Thailand or anything like that. So if you look at a map of the world, it's not that impressive because I haven't been to Russia. I haven't been to mainland China.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Brazil. I haven't been to Greenland, but I've been to all the Caribbean countries. I've been to all the Pacific countries after
Gary's
next week.
Been to twice as many countries as I have, but my map looks better because I have been to China and Russia.
And that fills in a lot of space
on a map. That fills in a lot of space on a map.
So I was mentioning before, there's 193 countries according to the UN. There's the Traveler Century Club, which is about 325 places.
Right.
And for the extra insane, there's a group called The Best Traveled. And if you look on their map, it's 1,281 places you need to go to on the planet. So if you look at someone like Gary or myself, whose map might look good on the traditional, you know, you've been to the country filled in, someone like myself who's been to 100 countries, it looks like I've never been anywhere on the best traveled list. So it's a little
I've
little
been to silver. A lot of non-countries.
Likewise.
So I've got way more on the Traveler Century Club list because I've been to all the U.S. territories, most of the French territories. I was just in St. Pierre and Miquelon last week.
Okay.
British territories, I've been to St. Helena and the Falklands and all this stuff.
How about Transnistria, Nagorno-Karabakh?
Not yet. But I'm planning an Eastern Europe trip where I would be going through Transnistria.
Okay.
So and now I feel like we are starting to make up countries at this point.
Well, depending on who you ask, they are made up.
Yeah, it ain't much of a country. It's a de facto country. No one recognizes it, but they kind of run their own show.
Well, there's good trivia because two countries do recognize Transnistria.
But they're also South Ossetia and Abkhazia.
So I was walking down the street in Transnistria and I see the flags hanging outside of a building and I see embassy and I go, you know, I look a little closely because I'm like, I don't recognize those flags. And it was South Ossetia and Abkhazia, which are two other unrecognized countries that were freed from Georgia in 2008 during Russia's invasion.
The incursion. Okay.
If you go to, I remember I was in Taipei, and I was walking past the city hall, and they had all the flags of the countries that recognized Taiwan as China.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like the Marshall Islands, El Salvador, and these countries always change because they barter away recognition for stuff. So Nauru got a free plane. Like their plane, their whole airline in one plane got repossessed, and they lost. That was the only way to get to the island. And they're like, okay, Taiwan's not China, and they gave them a plane, and that's how it works.
Anyways, where can we find you on the web?
Yep. So you can check me out on Global Gaz, GAZ for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. The podcast is Counting Countries, and I also produced a documentary, Hit the Road India, Hit the Road Cambodia. Go to Hit the Road Movie for that.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
And Gary, Ireland.
Is the place that you haven't been to that is... Okay.
Okay, guys.
I haven't been to Norway or Jamaica.
I'll meet you there. Thank you.
I've been to Norway. I haven't been to Jamaica. Welcome. Introduce yourself to our audience here.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm Barbara Weibel. My blog is holeinthedonut.com. Named that way because I spent 36 years in corporate life and was pretty miserable through most of it and felt like a donut, solid on the outside but empty on the inside. So 10 years ago when I hit the road, I named my blog that to try and fill the donut hole.
I was going to say, you've been doing this quite a while.
You and I started about the same time, Gary.
My blog 10-year anniversary was 2 days ago.
And mine is next month.
Yeah.
And I have known you so long online. Have we ever met in person?
Yeah. We met at the second TBEX.
The second TBEX.
In New
okay.
York, I think, right?
Okay.
I don't think you were in Chicago, were you?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I met you there.
All right.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
So you were in Chicago at the first TBEX?
Yeah, I was at the first one.
There are not many of us that can say that.
Well, it was tiny.
Because there was a little over 100 people there.
Right.
And it's changed a lot, hasn't it?
It has. And in some ways for the better. I would say most ways for the better. But, of course, when you get big, you lose that sort of very intimate family feeling that you had in the beginning. Which is sad, but it's just the way the world goes.
Right.
But I still talk to a lot of the people I knew who started blogging back then.
Mm-hmm.
I think Craig and Linda Martin.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jodi Ettenberg, I remember. She started in like 2009, I think.
Donna Hull.
Sure.
well, what's the name of the other? Well, Chariot.
Yeah, she just had a 10-year anniversary.
Right, right.
Well, is hers of her blogging or of her travel?
Sherry is both.
Yeah.
Well, she no, she well, that's true.
She's got it, not,
she was a blogger before she was officially a blogger. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She's always had the blog, but of course they had the I forget what the name of the company they had to encourage people to take career breaks.
Meet Plan Go.
Meet Plan Go. That's it. Yeah, she had that as well at the time.
Right.
So
you've been doing this for 10 years. Are you based anywhere, or are you still just kind of traveling around?
No, I'm nomadic now. I had an apartment for the first few years after I hit the road. I started my blog in 2006. I hit the road in the beginning of 2007. I had an apartment at that time, but I found I was never there. So in late 2009, I finally gave up the apartment and went completely nomadic. And I've been doing that ever since. It's sort of been an onion peeling thing, you know. It's it happens in stages. I kept the apartment, or I let go of the apartment, but I kept the car because I would go home for Christmas every year to visit the family, and I thought, oh, you know, I gotta have a car. And three years ago, I came home for Christmas, and the tires on the car were flat because it had sat in the sun all year long and it rotted. So it cost me $600 for tires, and I'd been paying about $600 or $700 a year to keep it insured. And I thought, this is crazy. I can rent a car for a month for less than that. So then the car went. So now I have nothing except my little 22-inch roll-on suitcase and my backpack with my equipment.
I did just the opposite. I finally got an apartment last year.
Did you?
Yeah.
At some point, I think that I'm going to need a base again. And I'm actually, I had always thought it would be Thailand because I go to Thailand in the winter every year. And with what's going on in Thailand right now, it's a bit unstable, I think. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So I was really excited to come to the Philippines here because the conversation over the last couple of years has been, what's the alternative to Thailand with the expats? And everybody is saying, check out the Philippines. And I'm really pretty...
Now, would check out the Philippines, I often hear, not necessarily Manila, but...
Not Manila.
Cebu or Davao or...
Baguio.
Baguio,
Tagate.
Okay. Interesting.
Baguio is much cooler. Because it's up in the mountains.
Okay.
And that was the American capital, if you will. I think that's the only city in the Philippines that was founded by the Americans.
Interesting. Well,
it's got about 325,000 population. It's a very strong art and cultural community. A lot
and
of
it's
expats.
Luzon, or I don't know where.
Yeah, north of here.
It's in, it's on Luzon, yeah. And I don't know anything more than that about it. I've just been told. So.
But I think I'd probably end up going on an island.
Do you?
I'd go to the beach, yeah.
You would. I kind of need a little bit bigger community. I want to be able to go out my
Gary,
front
Gary
door.
Gary doesn't like people and likes diving, so, you know.
No, if I could, I would, yeah, I would totally get something on the beach and just go swimming every day.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, I...
Well, and I might miss the beach, you know, but then again, I can come down to the beach for a weekend if I want to. But I want to go to the coffee shop in the morning and work on my laptop for an hour, and you know. And the nice thing about the Philippines that I've discovered just in this recent research is it's really easy to get residency here. If you're over 50, $10,000 in the bank, you get a residency permit that's good forever. You never have to renew it, and you can go in and out of the country at will. You don't have to be here a certain number of days.
Really?
In Thailand, you got to do it every year. It's crazy.
Well, not to mention language is much easier here.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would say it's probably just as affordable as Thailand.
I think it's more affordable now.
That could be.
Yeah.
Does it depend where you are in Thailand?
Well, of course, Bangkok is more expensive.
Yeah.
And Chiang Mai is still pretty affordable, although the prices have gone up. Yeah, it does kind of.
Although they do have that blogger infestation they've been dealing with in
Chiang
Mai. They
do indeed, but I stay on the other side of the city from them. And what's nice about Thailand is I can get a residence.
Yeah.
So it's a service department. I don't have to worry about is the toilet going to dry out of water and is it going to crack? You know, they come in twice a week, they check all that. I can be gone whenever I want to. But it's still kind of aggravating because you have to get exit permits and so that you don't have to start the process all over again. And I think this might be a much better option.
Interesting.
So what are you doing when you're not in Southeast Asia?
Oh, well, I'm only in Southeast Asia for perhaps 3 months a year, although that may be more. But I just travel from place to place. I don't have an itinerary. I have sort of a short list every year of where I might want to go, but I don't make plans because something will come up and I want to be able to take advantage of it. And if I'm locked into reservations, then I can't do that. So this year I spent, the last 2 years I've spent 4 to 5 months in Europe, and I just came from Europe. And I'm working on a book, my first e-book actually, about places that might not be on your radar in Europe but should be. And I've been on a mission to sort of go to every country in Europe. I'm shy of that by about 7 countries, mostly the Stans, which they classify as Europe. And then the other one that's really a problem for me is Belarus, because they require a letter from your insurance company stating that you're covered for health insurance. Someone just suggested to me I need to look at a short-term medical policy, like, you know, with one of the travel companies, which would be a great solution to that problem.
I've been told the key to getting into Belarus, if you want to do it easy,
yeah,
travel by train from Lithuania.
I love Lithuania.
And they don't really check very much, and it's
really
very easy to do if you get your visa in Lithuania.
Well, you know, that's true. There was an awful lot of bus options into Russia from Lithuania. I was in Vilnius this year and fell in love with Vilnius.
That's what I've been told. I have not done it, but yeah. Whereas if you fly into Belarus, it's a big pain.
Ah, very interesting. I'm going to have to check that out. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's what I've heard.
Anything else you want to tell our audience from your years of experience here in this travel blogging world? One tip that you would give some of the youngsters at the TBEX conference?
Oh, dear. Well, at TBEX, everybody knows that the travel is not dangerous. But
okay.
One of the things that I get mostly from people, because my blog is all first-person stories. And
I wouldn't say that it's not dangerous. I would say that people are afraid of exactly the wrong things. That, you know, traffic, for instance, they still need to be careful about,
well, that's
just
true.
Like they do
that's
at home.
but I tell people, you know, the number one thing is you have to be aware of what's happening around you all
yeah.
the time. You have to listen to your gut. Unfortunately, people who prey on you, they know that you want to be pleasant and that you don't want to appear rude. And they, I tell people, I give you permission to be rude. If you feel like you're in danger, if you're in a situation that could turn dangerous, then you just say, no, leave me alone, and you get out of there. And I think people are not willing to do that. But I also think they do kind of dumb things when they travel sometimes, things that they wouldn't do in their home. You know, I mean, little things. Like, you know, a woman doesn't hang her handbag on the back of a chair in a restaurant when you're traveling. You should loop it up through your leg and, you know,
sure.
and secure it. So it's just that sort of thing. Be aware, listen to your gut, and travel is not a dangerous occupation.
Excellent. And one more time, your blog.
It's holeinthedonut, donut.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Having waited patiently, introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, my name is Rochelle, and I blog at Adventures Around Asia. I've been living in China for about the last 3 years, and I travel around Asia pretty much every chance I get.
Now, this is audio, so people can't tell that you are not Chinese.
I am not Chinese. I'm from Seattle.
But you moved to China because...
Well, I've always been
Did
really...
Did you speak Chinese before you moved to China?
I studied it in school.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the first time I went to China, was actually to study abroad. I studied abroad in Beijing and Xi'an to learn Chinese and Chinese culture and history, and then I didn't get enough of it in the 7 months I was there, so after I graduated, I moved back, and then I've been there ever since.
So where in China do you live? It's a big place.
Yes. I was in Ningbo before, but now I live in Beijing.
And the typical story of somebody who lives in China is that you're making your living teaching English.
I'm not teaching English
okay,
anymore.
Anymore, but so
yeah.
you did at one point.
So I did. That was, you know, the easiest way was
yep.
to move back and to teach English. So I went through a teach abroad program, which probably wasn't the best idea. It seemed really reputable at the time, but they ended up... you know, they promised that they'd place us all in cities, and when I got Ningbo, I was like, oh yeah, fine. And then I show up, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by factories, and I was the only foreigner, like, for miles, and most of my students had never had a foreign teacher before, so yeah, that was kind of a big shock, but I stayed for a whole year.
And what are you doing now to make a living?
Right now, I kind of have two full-time jobs. One is my blog,
right.
And then the other one is I work as a college counselor, so I help Chinese students apply to American universities.
I have a feeling that business is booming.
Yeah.
It's admission season right now, so getting away for the conference, I had to kind of get her up to my boss a little bit.
We had a young gal lived with us for 2 years going to a local junior college and just graduated from UC Berkeley. And so we have a Chinese daughter, basically, because that's how we feel about her, who still stays touch and is still local. She will probably have to go back to China at some point.
Yeah.
Or still on her F1 visa.
But. Yeah, it's definitely, I like it much more than teaching abroad, and the money's pretty good. I'm using it kind of to pay off my student loans from grad school. But yeah, it's definitely a good job if you're interested in teaching abroad, but you don't necessarily like teaching.
Right,
or you don't
want
to be working with kids, because I work with high school students, which is really fun. Yeah.
I've got to run to a speed dating thing. I'll be right back.
So you advise your students to, like, join the football team, get a scholarship, Division I, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Extracurricular activities are a big thing that a lot of Chinese students aren't quite sure about. And they always ask, like, what's the best extracurricular activity to join? Or, like, what exact score do I need on my SAT to get into this school? And I'm like, it doesn't really work like that. But, yeah, so that's a lot of my job.
And is it basically, it's like they want to be in the Ivy League schools?
They want to be in Cornell because it's the easiest Ivy League to get into. And if I hear one more word about architecture, because they're like, "Oh, I'm good at math and science, and I'm good at drawing, so I must major in architecture." And I'm like, "There's plenty of other majors, you know." So that's a lot of my job in Beijing. Yeah.
And where do they go if they're not getting into the Ivy League?
Top 50 is a big goal. So any school in the top 50, but they tend to like state schools and, you know, bigger schools that they understand the name. So even if they can't get into top 50, University of something sounds really official. So whereas like liberal arts schools, they're like, oh, I haven't heard of that. I don't care if it's, you know, if it's
sounds like top. It's really just a prestige thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but a lot of the students, they want to go to liberal arts colleges or they're really interested, but a lot of the parents are very, you know, prestige oriented. Yeah. It's an interesting job for sure.
So even a place like University of Wisconsin or Michigan or something
very
like that.
Very popular, yeah. Actually, two of my Chinese colleagues went to University of Wisconsin. Yeah.
Excellent. Wisconsin.
Yeah. Oh, you're from there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
So about your blog.
Mm-hmm.
So Asia.
Yes.
Big.
Yes.
Where in Asia have you all been? Other than China, of course.
Yeah, I've been all over. You know, the sort of the Southeast Asia backpacker trail. This is my third time in the Philippines. Even, you know, like I went through Tibet into Nepal, Hong Kong a million times, South Korea. I'm a big repeat traveler when it comes to countries. So, but yeah, any chance I get whenever I have vacation, I go on Skyscanner, see where's the cheapest, and I just go there and spend my time. So I travel as much as I possibly can.
Where in Asia haven't you been that you want to go?
Indonesia and Japan are the top ones right now. Also,
they're
Mongolia.
Pretty big countries.
Yeah. Also, Mongolia. I want to do a horse
track
in Mongolia.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a lot of my wish list. Like every time I visit a country, I have like three more new items on my wish list that I want to go to. So I just have to remember, like, oh yeah, I'm young. It's gonna be fine. I'll get to see everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm old and near death, so I can't do that.
Yeah, I travel a lot around China as well. I have like a goal to see all of the provinces in China, so I'm almost there. I'm about 10 away, so I think it's like 25 out of 35 counts.
That's
whether
not,
or not
too shabby.
Yeah. It depends on whether or not you count Hong Kong, Macau, Taiwan. Taiwan's on their official list. I'm like, oh.
But have you been there?
Yeah.
Well, then.
So.
All right, well, why don't you give your URL one more time where people can find
you
online?
Sure. So my blog is adventuresaroundasia.com, and you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at adventuresaroundasia, Twitter and Snapchat at adventures_asia. Adventuresaroundasia is a little too long. Yeah.
Got to do the Snapchat.
Yeah, love Snapchat.
See, I'm too old for it. I just want those damn kids to get off my lawn.
Yeah, it was really nice. Thanks so much for having
sure.
me. Yeah,
thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Who do we got next? Come on down.
Hey, we have a question for you.
We're recording right now, by the way.
Oh. I'll have to ask you later. Oh, do you want me to sit real quick just
sure.
because we're here?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is Rick Calvert. Been on the show several times before. Every time we do it at TBEX, he's the... What's the official title you have?
CEO.
CEO. Okay, of TBEX, fair enough.
Yeah. Traveler at large.
How did Philippines go for you?
It's been a disaster. We had a typhoon. We had a marathon in front of the hotel. You probably didn't even notice that.
No.
Well, because you weren't at the same hotel. We had a graduation.
This typhoon was really just, it just rained. That's all.
Yeah,
wasn't...
it was very mild.
Yeah.
We had several thousand college students graduate at the same time.
I noticed that yesterday, yeah.
And we had several thousand people come to celebrate Mass today.
Heard that.
That we didn't know about.
That was just before my session.
It's been awesome. It's a beautiful place. The Filipino people are so welcoming. I think it's, you know, it's Southeast Asia wide that their people are so into the hospitality. So
there was a lot of people working at TBEX. This is the most I've ever seen.
A lot of people that the tourist board had, volunteers,
by like double
college
or
students.
Triple what I've seen in other events. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, really nice signs. They did a great production. Our lunch today, I think, was the most fun lunch I've ever had at TBEX.
Yeah, I have no problem eating with my hands. I have no problem eating standing up. The only issue was I think the table should have been
a little taller.
Yeah, it was just kind of awkward. But yeah. Other than that,
that was fun. So I've had good comments about the talks, all except one. Some guy Gary gave the other day to
horrible.
People that didn't like.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Excellent.
And I got a great night's sleep last night, the first night's sleep this week.
I woke up at midnight.
Yeah.
I went to bed, like, right after I left here, so I was in bed before 7, and I was up at midnight.
7 to 4 for me. So I got a good 9 hours, but 4 a.m. I was up. So yeah, it's been a great event. I'm happy.
Excellent. Yeah. So we're pretty much, I think we have the closing keynote and the party tonight, and that's it.
Closing keynote with Patricia Schultz. 1,000 places to visit before you die.
We just had her on the. She was our first guest on the show.
And then closing party, Oktoberfest in Manila. Sounds interesting.
When you think Oktoberfest, of course you think
Manila.
Asian country that was colonized by the Spanish.
And San Miguel Beer, exactly. Yeah. And then we're getting ready to go to Jerusalem.
I'm looking forward to that. One of my favorite cities in the world. Nothing else really quite like it. When I was in Jerusalem previously, I was there for Holy Week. I wasn't there for Holy Week. I just happened to be there. And then it was like, oh, well, Holy Week coming up, I might as well stay. And so I photographed. So there's Western... Easter is when Orthodox Palm Sunday is, and then you have Passover going on, and all that stuff happening at the same time, and it's a very different kind of environment.
Well, we could. Chris asked me if we could break some news today about TBEX Europe, which I can't quite yet, because this show will air before we announce it. But we could break some news about Jerusalem, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So we have our first keynote speaker in TBEX Jerusalem will be Gary Arndt, which, you know, I asked you earlier today, had you ever given a... Because you've been part of a keynote several times as a, like, This Week in Travel was a keynote. And...
Well, I did. Well, I don't even know if you'd call it a keynote. Like, in New York, that was the second TBEX, but everything was just in one room.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a keynote.
Every talk was a keynote.
Yeah, and then... But I was, like, the first one in the morning, and then in Keystone, I did the closing keynote. But then we've done This Week in Travel on the stage a bunch of times.
Yeah. So I just thought, I was watching your talk yesterday, which was great, as typical, and I thought, you know, I have not seen you give a keynote solo at TBEX, and it's long overdue, and so Jerusalem.
I'd be happy to do it. Yeah.
And one of your favorite cities in the world. That'd be great. And then we'll be in Huntsville, Alabama next May.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a big space geek, and I was in Huntsville for a conference a couple of years ago, and they held a reception, and I'm guessing they would also hold a reception in the same place. It
the
was
Space
under
Museum.
A Saturn V rocket.
That's right.
Not a model. It was one of... There's only, I think, 3 Saturn V rockets that were built but never launched, and one of them is in Huntsville. Same thing that sent people to the moon.
Yes.
Right there.
I think they said it's 20 stories high. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's
really tall.
It's on its side.
Yeah.
So, and it's indoors. So you can actually, if they have the reception in the same place, you will be under the rocket.
Yeah. That is where it will be. And it's pretty freaking awesome.
And I think a lot of people may not be aware of the role that Huntsville played. When we think of the space program, you're obviously thinking Cape Canaveral in Florida, or maybe Houston.
Yeah.
Or
Houston,
JPL,
we have a problem.
For some of the unmanned missions.
Yeah.
But the original home of rocketry, or where a lot of it got started, was really in Huntsville.
Werner von Braun.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the movie October Sky, great movie. Homer Hickam. This kid from West Virginia, his dad's a coal miner, and he starts playing with model rockets, and it's his way out of the coal mines, and to get out of West Virginia is to learn about rocketry, and they build this rocket, and he goes to meet Werner von Braun and at the National Science Fair. Well, Homer Hickam runs that rocket program in Huntsville, Alabama.
I just thought of this. Here's a free idea for you.
Mm.
To actually, as one of the things you might be able to do, like instead of a day tour, do model rocketry.
That's a great idea.
No, I'm serious.
That is a great idea.
Build and launch a rocket. I bet most people have not done that.
We did that, actually, when I was in fourth grade. My fourth grade teacher was a model rocket guy, and we would go out of class several times a year and launch rockets. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun activity and pretty safe and straightforward.
It's a great idea. Well, anyway.
All right. And,
you have people waiting to talk to you.
Yeah, and where can people find about Jerusalem and Huntsville?
TBexCon.com.
TBexCon.com.
Right. Thank you, Gary.
Great.
Always
Thank
good to
much.
See you, sir.
Who is next? And I'm doing this solo because Chris is off doing something else.
Hi.
Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Chris from Aussie on the Road. I've been traveling for about 8-9 years now. Based in China, but I work for a safari company in Africa full-time.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because you know that makes...
Because that's where you live when you're doing safaris.
Yeah, logistical sense. So yeah, I'm in China setting up an office for a Tanzanian safari company. And that sort of keeps me busy most of the year. I'm about to go back. I go back to Africa once a year.
And booking Chinese tourists to go
on
safari?
Yeah, getting things translated. I don't speak Mandarin, so I have like someone who's translating and getting social media. Because obviously, in China, everything's different. They don't do Facebook and Twitter, so it's a whole... It's basically starting from scratch over there.
And what brings you to TBEX?
Well, I've been blogging as Aussie on the Road since 2008. First, I was a typical like expat teaching English in Korea and then China. And then as I've grown up a bit, I've sort of... My travel's become my life, I guess. And obviously, the safari thing keeps me busy, but it also means I have the freedom to travel year-round now, which is good.
And where are you from in Australia?
I grew up in a village of 50 in northern New South Wales, up in the mountains. So it's green. We get snow in the winter. My family is 15 of them, so it wasn't a really exciting place to grow up, but it's beautiful. I go back once a year when I can.
So I'm trying to think, where is that, near the Queensland border? Or
it is. It's like an hour south of the Queensland border, but because we hate Queensland, and I'm from New South Wales, so we never say Queensland, even though it's much closer for us than Sydney. But yeah, growing up out there was obviously...
I didn't know they had snow that far north.
We do. We get like an inch in some winters, and then when we do, people will drive from 8 to 10 hours away to see snow. And I mean, it's gone by the end of the day, but it's sort of a novelty in Australia outside of Canberra.
I have seen snow in Australia, but I was in Hobart.
Oh yeah, yeah, Tasmania, yeah. Big for snow as well. Yeah, we don't get enough to build good snowmen. It's more just for the view of, you know, a nice pristine snowfield.
And is this your first TBEX?
No, I did Bangkok last year. I was actually, again, based in Africa that last year, so I came all the way over for it and then went home after. It's always fun. It's a good way to, like, being based in sort of different countries most of the time. my regular friends are these people who I see here, because obviously moving every year, you're sort of having to start from scratch with your social circle. Yeah.
And how do you like this one?
It's been fun. I mean, the Philippines is one of my favorite countries. I've been before. I'm coming back twice next year. I won the free flight from London to here.
Oh, next, sweet.
Yeah, so I just have to get to London.
Can you do it the other way around?
I've asked. They're not sure yet, so we'll find out. If not, I'll have to...
So I think if you're in China, just come here, free flight to London.
Makes much more sense. Yeah. I'll visit my friends in London, and I'll spend some time here. So we'll see what they say. I'm hoping that'd be good. Because I do really enjoy it here. The people are so friendly, and I'm a big beach guy, being from Australia. So, yeah.
And what's your blog about?
I blog... I mean, mostly it's about life on the road in the full-time capacity, which is obviously what a lot of us do. So I guess what sets me apart mostly is I do safari a lot, which is a little more expensive for some people, so it's not something that everyone gets to do. And I blog a lot about... I have clinical depression, so any given week can be awful for me. Other weeks are great, even though my life is good. So I like to be honest about that, and I like to sort of show people that... You know, it's easy to be very glossy and pretty as a blogger. You know, you can tell all the good stories, but I like to also tell the times where I feel awful. So, because I think that inspires people who have the same issue. If they're like, if he can get out there and do it, you know, then I can also try that. And I mean, for me, travel is the best treatment I've found for clinical depression. So I've been dealing with that since I was 18, and I'm 32 now. It's been better than any medication or therapy I could do.
Is it just experiencing new things, or...?
Yeah, I think keeping my mind occupied is a big part of it. And obviously when you travel, you're more active, and that's good for your endorphin levels. Obviously, it still happens. Like, even as recently as a month ago, you know, I was in Malaysia on a really amazing fam trip, and I still had a day where I just couldn't even summon the energy to like, get out of bed. I had to, and I did, but it was like it was a rough day. So it's, you know, it comes and goes, I guess.
All right. When does the keynote start?
I will check, but I think we still have a few minutes.
All right, well, why don't you give people your URL?
Yep, so you can find me at aussieontheroad.com. That's A-U-S-S-I-E, not the U-S way. And I'm on all social media as Aussie on the Road as well.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
We have half an hour.
Oh, okay.
Nice to not meet you.
Who do we got next?
I think he was. This gentleman.
Please join us.
Come on down.
Hey, good to meet you. Oh, I was just listening to your podcast with Alexa Meissner.
That was,
yeah.
So introduce yourself to the radio audience. They're the most important people here.
Hello, world. My name's Michael Aquino. I'm I write the Southeast Asia travel site for About.com. I've been writing it since around December 2007, so I've kind of been writing about Southeast Asia for a while. It's such a big area to cover, but generally, as I've written and I've pursued my interests more in the region, I've found myself gravitating towards Indonesia, Malaysia, and recently Myanmar. So I just undertook this epic just a few months last year. I took an epic tour through Myanmar, coming in via Yangon, then climbing up to Bagan, then Pindaya, then Inlilik, then Mandalay, and back.
So. Now, you've also started your own blog. Did I understand that correctly from your comment in Gary's session earlier today?
I am thinking about
You're
it.
You're thinking about starting a
blog. And I am 90% sure that I will do it. And in fact, I've been having some conversations with other experienced bloggers, and I think I've got to focus on. I'm thinking about focusing more about culture and history.
I was going to say, now, what sort of things can you write about on your own blog that you can't write about in what you're doing for About.com, for instance?
Well, can't is difficult to say because About.com, my site on About.com covers like everything
sure,
about travel.
But obviously there are different editorial guidelines.
Exactly. So, but I'm thinking of covering more my personal interests, like the history of the culture of Southeast Asia, which I think is very interesting because there are different layers to it.
Sure.
If I'm sure not a lot of travelers to Southeast Asia know, that many of the major kingdoms around Southeast Asia were Indianized kingdoms. Like they were, okay. We had, there was an influx of culture
from India.
From India.
Yep.
And that still underpins a lot of the cultures around Southeast Asia,
right,
which you can see more.
Now, in the Philippines, more in the south than in the north.
Yes, but what also what people don't know is that there were Indianized kingdoms in the Philippines as well.
Okay.
So you can actually hear it in our language. We have some words like Diwata and Guru, which actually come from Sanskrit.
Interesting.
And my friend Carlos Celdran likes to talk about layering, which you can see in the languages of the people of the cultures of Southeast Asia. My personal experience is here in the Philippines because I'm Filipino and I'm based here in Manila. So you can see that a lot of, like, we have those older words that are from Sanskrit, and then maybe some words that are from Spanish. The interesting thing is we don't have a word, the word we have for hell is Spanish. It's infierno.
Well,
and heaven is Malay, langit. So I think I'm going to tease out those cultural threads in if I'm allowed to pursue my own blog.
Okay. Now, but you don't have a URL to give us yet.
I can give you the URL of my about.me page.
Okay, why don't you give us that?
All right. I'm at about.me / Mike_Aquino. My about.com page is goseasia.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on.
All right.
We're in the lightning round here, so we're going to do people faster. Tim, why don't you come join us? I say us, but Gary has walked away.
I saw him earlier by himself, so you're trading off.
So introduce yourself to our audience here. You've been on This Week in Travel before.
Yes, thank you for having me back despite that. My name is Tim Leffel. I run a few different websites, and my oldest one is the Cheapest Destinations blog, which has been around since 2003, kind of the dawn of the blogosphere, I guess. And I run a few others, including Perceptive Travel, which is all narrative stories from book authors. But different things, the portfolio approach, in case one takes a nosedive, I'll have something else to fall back on.
You are wearing a speaker tag here because you spoke here, and your speaker tag actually stayed on, which is more than mine did. But so what did you speak on?
My talk was about on productivity and getting more things accomplished, which is something I think a lot of writers of all types struggle with, and artists. And
so you basically started with drink more caffeine. thanks very much for coming.
I was trying to get the point across that you don't have to work 60 hours a week because that's bad for your health and your mental state. So it's mostly a matter of what's important in your life and what do you really want to get done. And oh, by the way, we all love social media, but you have to turn it off sometimes.
Why? I don't understand. Do you have any particular tools that you were recommending people use that would make things easier for the independent travel blogger?
Well, there's a lot of scheduling tools, and I think everybody who hasn't used all of those already should be using a lot of them, like If This Then That and Hootsuite for Twitter. And of course, you can schedule posts in Facebook if you have a fan page, so that you can queue up a week's worth of things you want to get out there. And also, just remember that email is not a messaging program. You can go on twice a day and knock it all out. You don't have to have it on constantly dinging on your desktop or notifying you on your phone.
Well, turning off notifications, I think, would be the number one thing to do first there.
Yeah. It so many times, I think it puts people in that Pavlov's dog sort of reaction mode where they got to go look at how many people like their Instagram photo.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I hear people talk about, when they talk about inbox zero and things like that, that, you know, it's not like you're going to get an email that says you won the lottery. Why do you have to check it every hour? The problem is, as a travel blogger, sometimes it is very much like that. You'll get an email that says, hey, would you like to come to, and that's followed by, hey, I won the lottery. Basically, you know, I would love to go to that place. So I think that makes it harder somewhat.
But you usually don't have to answer them within an hour.
You don't. You absolutely don't.
The few times where I've taken a day or two to check my email, the worst thing that happened is some random media outlet I'd never heard of wanted a quote about something and they needed it that day. But that's pretty rare.
Excellent. We're kind of in the lightning round of the section right now. Do you have one other tip for... You've been doing this travel writing for a while. You were a travel writer before you were a travel blogger.
Yes. Okay, my one tip is, just because you've heard something is dead or dying, it's probably not. And in the travel writing world, that means magazines and books and things like that. But we're still not in flying cars, and we're probably going to keep using the telephone and keep reading books.
Okay, cool. I will update my MySpace profile with that word of wisdom.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you.
One more URL. You gave us two. One more from your collection of URLs.
Well, for those who want to improve their travel writing skills or their knowledge, I have a site that goes with one of my books. It's just travelwriting2.com, and they can go there, get on the newsletter list, and hopefully learn more about writing well and earning some money from their travels.
Excellent.
Thanks. Right. Talk to you guys.
I bought a copy. Actually, I think I just found out this week I bought two copies of your book. I went to put it on my Kindle for the trip, and I realized it was already on my Kindle.
Well, thanks for the contribution.
That's okay. You're worth it. Come, have a seat.
Hi.
Introduce yourself. We're in the lightning round of the Amateur Traveler at this point.
Awesome.
Except it's not the Amateur Traveler.
Oh, sorry. Wrong show. Oh, This Week in Travel.
Oh, where are we? Wait.
No. We're in This Week in Travel.
Okay, good.
Introduce yourself to our audience.
Betsy Webker.
Peter Webker. Passingthrough.com.
You've practiced this.
Yeah.
Passing through...
THRU.com.
Right. You happen to be passing through the Philippines right now, but what do you talk about in your blog?
Well, we talk toward readership who tends to be our age.
And this is audio.
Boomer.
There you go.
I sound younger than I actually am.
And by the way, I'd like to thank your generation for giving us these presidential nominees.
You're entirely welcome.
That is
it's been
mean.
So entertaining, hasn't it?
I'd like to disclaim from being a boomer if that's where we're going
to... Yeah, it's kind of nice to be a little farther away from it here in the Philippines.
Not much further away.
Yeah,
it's on the news everywhere.
Yeah. So, no, our readership tends to be 35 and up. People have got time and money to travel.
How does that change what you write? You're not writing about staying in hostels as much? No. Okay.
We do like our creature comforts now that we've reached a certain age. So we're talking, mid to... value luxury kind of stays.
So if you don't see that hotel includes what, do you go on to the next listing?
Well, I tend to like a lot of pillows.
They don't list that on the website.
I know.
I'm with you, but it's not there.
They have to have Matlock on TV.
Matlock on TV.
Oh, man, I'm going to start to get a complex here.
I was just in Mexico doing a volunteer trip, and they had turned on the radio station, one of the local radio stations, and it was playing all music from the 70s. And you're like, how far are we away that the radio signals are just getting here?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good radio station to me.
Yeah. So, well... creature comforts. I think the easiest thing to do when you're looking is look at the number of stars if you're looking for a review. I think you're fairly safe with anything 3 up.
Now we see stars. There's multiple different star systems.
Right.
So most of the online booking sites have a 3-star hotel has a certain number of amenities versus a 3-star review, which means people who stayed there liked it. You're talking about the first one.
I'm talking about the first one.
Okay.
And then in the second one, I tend to, if it's 1 to 5 stars, I look for something that's like 4.5, kind of in that range. And you can always get a dud even though you utilize that methodology, but for the most part, it's served us pretty well.
And do you have one tip for travelers? Let's say in your case, for boomer travelers who haven't gotten on the road yet, this is the one thing you should know.
We had a friend who recently visited Europe. He hadn't been there in 5 or 6 years. And he was having trouble with his Verizon phone. And didn't realize that he probably was overpaying. I think they were charging him like $10 a day to use his phone in Germany. And he could have picked up a SIM card at the airport and for about $20 or $30 had unlimited data rather than posting all his social media updates that turned out to be upside down because Verizon wasn't accessing the network properly. So
I thought it might have been because he was in the southern hemisphere.
That happens to my Instagram posts when
he was at Oktoberfest.
Oh, well, there may have been a different problem there at that point if Oktoberfest was involved.
Yeah.
Tell us again your URL.
PassingThroughTHRU.com.
Excellent. We're gonna move on here because we have people who are queued up
us.
Here.
Sure.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Amy, come sit. Hello. Introduce yourself.
Oh, hello, Chris.
You are?
I'm Amy Trumpeter, and I run two travel blogs, globetrotterguru.com and templeseeker.com.
Okay, and you are not from here?
I am from the UK.
And templeseeker.com. This is your new one.
This is a Shirley Temple fan site blog.
That is correct. Gary was able to guess on the first guess. I thought that was amazing.
I must correct you. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I started out writing a lot about solo female travel.
Yeah.
But I've kind of in the last 6 months found my niche, which is I'm really big into church architecture, mosques, sites of religious pilgrimage. And my background is I did a degree in religion and theology, and I did a master's in South Asian studies. So I'm now homing in on that specialism, and that's going to be the focus of my new travel blog.
So, for example, you wrote a recent post on...
I wrote a recent post on the church in Sofia, Alexandra Nevsky Cathedral, and the Orthodox Christianity behind it. I've also written quite a bit on York Cathedral.
York.
I'm actually based in York.
Wait, did you say the Orthodox Cathedral in...
Sofia.
Oh, okay.
It's Bulgarian Orthodox.
I thought you said... Never mind, I thought you were talking about Spain.
So that's Bulgarian Orthodox, but it has Russian Orthodox influences because of the Gold Dome.
Yeah.
But there are slight differences within the religion. And then I'm quite interested in York Cathedral at the moment. I'm looking at the history behind it because it was built in Roman times, Norman times. There's been several reconstructions of it, and we're home to the biggest Gothic cathedral in Europe.
I did not know that.
So you must come and visit.
I knew there were other reasons I wanted to get to York, but I did not know that. Excellent. One more time, the URL?
templeseeker.com.
Excellent. We're in the lightning round now, so I apologize.
I really think that's a great idea for a website.
I'm glad. It's a bit of a niche, and I know from TBEX in Stockholm that we've been told we need a niche, so I'm looking forward to focusing on that.
I think that's a great one, because people always complain about being... every cathedral looking the same, but I think they're all different.
It's all different, and I'm writing from an architectural perspective rather than me being religious myself. But thank you so much for having me on your show.
I don't even know my name sometimes.
Excellent. Well, hopefully, if you remember your name, you'll come and enter it, and you're not wearing your name tag, so we have no idea. Come sit, please.
Yes,
dead air.
I'm gonna do
Izzy, girl traveler.
Yes, Izzy, girl traveler. My name is Izzy Polito. I am the blogger powering thenextsomewhere.com. I also am the managing editor for Vietnam Tourism. So wielding both hats right
for,
now.
Managing editor for?
For Vietnam Tourism.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
So relaunching the digital platform, and it's unveiling in WTM, so... There's
the World Travel Market, which is coming up here in November in London.
Yes, exactly.
Our audience wouldn't necessarily know. That's
what are you going to be there?
Possibly, maybe. I'd like to see a little bit more of Vietnam, too. And there's another one in Germany that I think I'm going to be more, relevant for. But I work with another gentleman who's based in London right now, and I think he really wants to debut it. And it's his baby, so.
So this conference is... really a nexus of the travel bloggers and the travel industry, including destinations. You
exactly.
wear both hats.
Yes, it's been interesting to have my feet in both spheres.
And that's relatively new?
Yes, very new, actually. So,
how has that changed how you view the travel blogging industry, the TBEX conference, life in general?
I think I have so much more respect for it. There are so many people. I mean, I
you know, give my elevator pitch, and when I feel like I'm stumbling on something, then I can revert back to, you know, well, hey, I'm this recruiter, da-da-da-da-da, and then I feel like somebody else is at my mercy, but there's a lot more empathy, you know, so, like...
You know, the at my mercy part, that was a little scary. I feel like the power may have corrupted. No.
It's really, like, again, so much empathy, and people are just doing so many great things, and like I said, too, I'm really pushing my agenda, but at the same time, like, there's so much organization happening and in something so massive such as this, and I love the community and I love the spirit.
So as you wear your travel blogger hat,
yes,
most interesting thing you saw at the conference?
Most interesting thing was definitely the food feasting, and it's just been really phenomenal because I'm Filipino, so okay. I usually don't see all of these foods at once. I mean, there's a lot of regional specialties, and to see it all together,
like
right
the
now,
lunch we had, where for those of us who are not Filipino, it was rather strange to come in, and it was all on long tables. There was
pretty low to the floor.
Low to the floor, no chairs, and you, by the way, you're supposed to eat with your fingers.
Yes, BTW. Yeah.
They did give silverware for those
of us.
Yeah,
it was kind of really nice.
But they were trying to do something more traditional. Okay.
Yeah.
As you wear your industry hat, your DMO hat, your destination marketing organization hat, what was the most interesting thing you saw at TVEX?
Just the caliber of talent here. And
most
also,
impressed with who? And you're welcome to say both Gary and my name.
Okay. Well, yes, all of the speakers are phenomenal. I especially...
But who do we don't know that you were impressed with?
There is a person named Adventure in You, and she is based in Chiang Mai. She's a Filipina too, and she does adventure travel, but they've made it into a business model, and they're launching their app. Would love to work with them because, like I said, adventure is a huge niche, especially since Fengya just really opened up and elevated Vietnam on the international platform.
And so, you need to say what that is because not everybody knows that because it just opened up.
Yes, Fengya is a recreational destination in northern Vietnam, and it's home to Han Son Dong, which is the largest cave system in the world. It's so impressive that it has its own like localized weather system. So, and it has
the largest cavern.
Largest cave system is Mammoth Cave.
Yes. Okay. So cavern. Pardon my misstep. So yeah.
Well, the one is largest by length.
Yes.
One is largest by size. The one in Vietnam is largest by size.
In terms of volume.
Volume
of a single chamber.
Yeah.
And I should say the previous one before they discovered this, I visited in Malaysia, and that was goddamn big. So. This has to be really big.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, it has like a backlog of 2 years, and it's a great expedition. So,
excellent.
Yeah. So, I'm excited to hopefully have her on board. Everybody's just wonderful here, and people have been so open to.
Excellent. Yeah. One more time, the URL for your blog.
HTTP thenextsomewhere.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. Why don't you stand and
talk with
Gary while I find
Izzy, make sure to say hello to Axel / and Duff.
Oh my word, oh gosh, I'm a little intimidated, but thank you so much for having me, and thank you for inspiring me again to just like jump at every opportunity to.
That's what I do.
You're doing it.
Come, sit.
Okay.
We're in the lightning round, so we're rapidly running out of time here.
I bet.
Introduce yourself to our audience.
All right, we are Bobo and Chi Chi. We are travel bloggers, and we focus on time-lapse and hyperlapse photography.
And are your names actually Bobo and Chi Chi?
No, they're Scott and Megan. He's Bobo. I'm Chi Chi.
Why are you Bobo and Chi Chi?
Long story short, I was living in Korea. She was having her dream job. Dream job was terrible. So I got these like coffee cups. Didn't know what to name her blog. We ended up going with something not so serious.
And it really wasn't a dream job.
I've had dreams like that, but
yeah,
we called it something else.
Yeah, it was like the Devil Meets Prada.
So,
Double Wave product.
So wait a second. You named the blog, and I feel like alcohol may have been involved, but I didn't quite catch the story of why it was Bogor Chichi.
It's just a fun light name. Like, when we were looking at the names, we couldn't pick out a travel name that we wanted that stood out, because I felt like all the names are already taken as such a saturated.
I felt that way
world.
11 years ago, and I think I just should have looked further. But you know, that's a whole other.
Should have picked Bobo and Chichi.
Apparently that was available. Actually, the one that I can't believe I didn't choose was Sexy Fun Traveler, which was used after me. And
Bobo and Chichi was my second one.
Yeah. Was that true? That's true. What do you focus on in Bobo and Chichi?
Well, we try to share our stories, like our unique stories, through time-lapse and hyperlapse photography. Like, we'll try to like go to a destination, shoot a fun video, and that's what.
And we also share like whatever's going on in our lives, our lifestyle, traveling. Sometimes we're expats living like in South Korea. Sometimes we're traveling, so it's whatever's going on in our life and trying to have this like maintain this lifestyle of traveling and living abroad and getting to see the world.
And you said time-lapse and hyperlapse.
Correct.
What is the time lapse barrier? Is this like the sound barrier where if you cross it into hyperlapse?
When the camera starts moving, then it becomes a hyperlapse.
Okay.
I guess that's
Thank
the technical.
Will you be going into ultralapse?
Ooh.
You should.
We're going to start strapping them to the rockets, and we're going to the moon with it.
Boba's ultralapse photography. That sounds good.
So people are going to go to your website, and the one hyperlapse video, I'm going to focus on the hyperlapse because, you know, that's just a cool name, that they really ought to check out, that's the best example of your work, is the one you did on.
The one that led up to our proposal, or my proposal to her, and it's called Come Walk With Us. And so it takes you through a visual tour of when we left Korea, through six countries, and then my proposal in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was your proposal done in hyperlapse form?
It was. It was done, and then
Did that give her enough time to respond, or was that too quick?
He tricked me, because I'm not allowed, when he's doing a long shot, he tells me, you can't move, and I'm trained. I'm trained like a dog. I can't move. I have to just keep looking.
Okay.
And then,
so as the world is spinning around you and things like that.
Well, no, he had it set up behind me, and then...
Got it.
So she's looking off in the distance.
And then all of a sudden, he's next to me, and I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, why? He must be taking a time lapse now with just him in it. And then he got down on one knee, and I realized, oh, this is happening. And boom. We were engaged.
Yeah. And fortunately, it ended better than her job.
Yes. It ended with a yes.
Cool. Give us your URL one more time.
It's boboandchichi.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One last one. Is it possible?
At least. Yep. We've got time.
Yay. Okay. Hi. Nina.
Hi. And introduce yourself to the little
Nina,
reporter here.
Hi, Nina Ragusa from whereintheworldisnino.com.
And I have often asked that.
Answer, Manila.
Well, right now I'm Manila, but no telling where I'm going next. I try not to plan too much. Right now I'm currently based in Australia for another 6 weeks, and then I'm off and away. And
where in Australia?
No official plans. I'm currently in Darwin, so I'm doing my working holiday visa. A few weeks left. I've been saving heaps this whole week. See what I did there? Been Aussie now, saving heaps. And yeah, so
you are a nomad, you are not actually a game show.
Kind of.
Okay.
So kind of like expat nomad, I'll stay someplace for a good chunk of time, but
okay.
I'm not like, oh, I'm staying someplace for like 7, 8, 9 years,
and
kind of expat.
The focus of the blog is the nomad lifestyle, or...
Kind of, yeah. I
you can say
live...
no if I'm
not. Well, it's funny. It's part of it.
Okay.
So I try to kind of advocate living and working abroad. Everybody's excuse for not traveling a lot is, well, I don't have money. But there's plenty of opportunities to work in another country. So that excuse is kind of getting a bit
debunked. Australia, though, you have to be under a certain age, don't you?
Yes, they. It used to be 31, and I think they are now upping it to 35. And Americans don't get the second year, unfortunately. But I made the most of my first year, or an only year. And my boyfriend and I, we just worked. We didn't do any of the holiday part because I can come back and be a tourist anytime.
Working doing what?
Right now I bartend and work at a surf shop. But
okay.
By the time I leave Australia, I'm going to have probably $17,000-$18,000 saved.
Well, in Australia, it's surprisingly easy to get a work visa or to get permission to work there,
I should say. It's really not that difficult because Americans aren't taking advantage of it. So it's like...
Backpackers
are their Mexico. Okay. In terms of their labor force.
I guess so. Yeah, but we're coming in like with a visa at least. Right. But like, yeah, it's super.
It's interesting versus, for instance, Thailand, it's Australia that's looking at the backpacker tax.
Yes, they have figured it out. It is, I don't know if they're going to change it, so maybe don't officially quote me on this. It was going to be like 30-something and then went down to 19.
Right,
I think
right. 19%
like yeah.
of what you
which
earn.
Is fair, yeah. which is pretty fair, you know. But yeah, I used to live in Thailand, worked there. I've done like odd jobs. I've worked online. So yeah, I'm just like finding ways to kind of extend my travels by working either online or in the country. And so, yeah.
So, and you get to be, as far as I can tell, the last word on the podcast in terms of guests.
Oh my God.
So in terms of people who want to travel, are there recommendations, you know, let's say that they're pre-college, are there things that you would recommend that they do to prepare for this? Or what did you find worked best in terms of getting you into this lifestyle?
Well, it can really be any time. You don't have to be pre-college, certain age, like literally.
Well, I was going to ask, it was a multi-part question.
Yeah, yeah. So you can be at any stage of your life, just I guess there's nothing to really prepare you for it. You kind of just have to hop on a plane and go. That I was like this crazy person who was like, I really want to travel. And so next thing you know, I'm saving a lot of money and I bought a one-way ticket to Bangkok. I had never even been to Asia in my entire life. And here
I am. Where are you from originally?
Florida. Yeah, so, and I get off in Bangkok airport. I didn't even book a hotel. I don't know what I was thinking.
So it sounds like your biggest advice is you don't have to be a planner necessarily.
You don't have to be a planner. I have shown up at the airport and bought a ticket 2 hours before the flight has left. Like, you don't
have...
That's
pretty much how I operate.
Yeah, I think it's so much better that way.
I don't have a hotel room for tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe some people think I'm crazy, but that's okay. I like it. And, no planning really that you have to do. But, you know, maybe research just a little bit so you're not totally in the dark. Know that you can work maybe in that country or, you know.
One of the things I find is that someone like me who is doing the work from home, you know, actually having a home, not working on the road, you know, or somebody who has a regular job, tends to do more travel planning just because we're talking about tighter time frames. And once you look at the nomadic time frame where it's like, well, I could go today or I could go next Tuesday or I could go next Thursday, and it just depends on what gets interesting, I think you can also get more flexible. And you also get more used to it,
too. Right. Yeah, you start just like not caring. You're like not freaking out about it or anything. And
excellent.
Just go with it. Go with the flow. Have fun.
Why don't you give us your URL again?
Yeah, so it's whereintheworldisnina.com.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. Nice meeting you.
Gary, did you have any last words you wanted to do to wrap this up? Or?
No.
I understand I missed an announcement, but...
Oh, yeah, I'm doing the keynote in Israel.
Okay.
I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, but I'm sure it will be entertaining, if not informative.
I'm sure that the PowerPoint presentation, if there is one, will be done hours ahead of time.
Well, probably not even that much. But anyways, we got to wrap things up. What's doing the Amateur Traveler this week?
Well, just a repeat episode this week because of travel, an episode about going to Jordan. Which was an
amazing. Are you doing reruns now?
I actually do now, because what I found is it's from 3 years ago and people don't remember it necessarily, and it keeps the numbers up. Nobody's never had a single complaint about it. And I only do it four times a year or so when I'm actually on vacation. So
do you give like a little voiceover beforehand?
Yeah, this is a repeat episode. I think you'll like this story.
I think you should do what Johnny Carson used to do. And get where he had, like, Joan Rivers and
that would be good.
Guest people to come.
Well, there's so many podcasts. A lot of the ones that I listen to, like Freakonomics and the TED Radio or things like that, I think they go on hiatus, like, 6 months a year. They're always, it takes a long time to make new episodes, so here's one of our, you know, premiere episodes. Prairie Home Companion podcast, the show has stopped, and the podcast hasn't, so it's all reruns at this point.
That's because Garrison Keillor actually retired.
Yes.
Went to the shores of Lake Wobegon. So anyways, let's wrap things up. People are probably sick of our rambling. As usual, you can find me online at everything-everywhere.com. You can also go to amateurtraveler.com. Until next time, if you get the opportunity, please come to the Philippines. Check out Manila. It's a wonderful place. It's cheap and easy to get around.
Except for the traffic.
Except for the traffic.